Echo Hotel. 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 Message 4. 437. 437. 92. Good. Attention. 437. 437. Echo Hotel. Echo Hotel. Echo Hotel. Echo Hotel.
hang it if you want to, but it's not that impressive of a song.
Ladies, you don't like carrying a man's wife. You're living in two jobs and then for war. Nobody's perfect, we've all got to work it. But fellas, we're worth it, so don't break the law. You're calling in slaves, so hang around a little more, call me back. Next time, bring my life, now be good to you. We're gift wrapped, skinny cats, really turned in time, really got the flat back. Let's go. Hand, understand that you can. I'm a man and I need you tonight. Come make my dreams all young as it seems. All we need is as easy as pie. Hi, I'm just a love machine. Be in my fantasy. Give me a kiss or three. I'm fine. I need to squeeze the day instead of the negligee. What will the neighbors say? This time I've been going crazy. Thinking of a language that the two of us can speak. So Mr. Prehistoric, make your wheel, and I'll breathe underwater, cause I like the way it is. I said you're cold, late, big mistake. You gotta hang around a little for as long as I take. Next time, read my mind, I'll be good to you. We'll give it back, skinny cats. You'll return in the time, so we got to fly back. Let's go, Eskimo, out into the blue. My hand, understand that you can. I'm a man and I need you tonight. Come make my dreams all yard as it seems. Though to me is as easy as pie. Hi, I'm just a love machine. Feeding my fantasy. Give me a kiss or three. Now fine, I need to squeeze a day instead of the negligee. What will the neighbors say? This time, oh, very new. Can anybody tell me what to do? Oh, this feeling's very strange. Can anybody tell me what's your game? Oh, a little education. Oh, let's give you motivation. Oh, turn the situation round. Oh, oh, making you stranger. Oh, all the way ranger. Now, I'm just a love machine.
Welcome to the Insomnia Stream. I'll fix my microphone here a little bit. I'm your host, of course, Devin Steck. This is the Insomnia Stream Open Edition. I'm going to turn my space heater off, too. It's actually getting cold out here. There we go. There, it's not that cold. I can afford to not have space heater during the stream. Okay. Anyway, let's get into what we're talking about tonight. It's called the Oatman Edition. The Oatman Edition. For those of you who haven't guessed yet, it's about Olive Oatman, the story of Olive Oatman. There's a, in fact, I believe there used to be two, but there's still one town in Arizona named after Olive Oatman. It's a cowboy story that is being maligned and being rewritten and revised lately. Can't imagine why. Can't imagine why the narrative of the Olive Oatman story is trying to be why it's being smeared and mutilated to fit modern sensitivities, shall we say? But let's see what really happened. Let's look at original sources, as I have, including newspapers, her own accounts. And let's just take a look at, for those of you who don't know the story, which is probably most of you, probably not all of you, but a lot of you, and see how it might relate to many of the issues of multiculturalism, because it is a story about multiculturalism. How it might relate to the multiculturalism issues of today. See, as many people well know as many, even more people like to rub in the faces of people that would like America to remain a white country, it wasn't always a land full of white people, right? They like to tell you that you were once the immigrants to this land. You were once the mass immigration taking place on this continent, replacing, demographically replacing people. And now this is your revenge. This is your revenge. Because it's totally the same, right? It's totally the same. All these white people came from Europe to enjoy the wonderful infrastructure and the institutions and the welfare state of the Native Americans. So they could go to their colleges. They could go to the Native American colleges and work at the Native American companies. And live in the Native American cities that they had built. So it's totally the same. It's totally the same. And, you know, and when the white people showed up, the Native Americans, they welcomed them with open arms. They said, you know, here's a debit card, because we've invented all that. Here's a debit card. We're going to fly you into the interior of the country with airplanes that we've also invented. And we'll set you up in some nice hotel that we built. And you can eat all the fresh groceries and food and health care that's all provided for free through our foresight and genius because of our developed civilization here that you came here to take advantage of, white man. See, it's all the same. It's exactly the same. Obviously, it's not the same, and but it doesn't matter. You'll still hear, even if the people that will admit that it's not the same, they like to gloss over the what it was like. Now, going all the way back to in kindergarten, when they tell you about the Pilgrims and the first Thanksgiving, the white people showed up and they were just totally unprepared. They didn't know what they were doing, and then the genius agricultural knowledge of the Indians saved them. And so Thanksgiving is where we say thanks to the Indians for showing Whitey how to survive, because we were just a bunch of fucking idiots. We didn't know what we were doing. And that's generally how it's viewed from that point on. And then we got too big for our britches, right? After we were welcomed with open arms, we then started scheming. We started scheming like, ha ha, ha ha, how can we take advantage of these innocent, bright-eyed Indians? They're so peaceful and one with nature, but because we're evil and conniving, we are going to trick them. They don't even understand land ownership. We're going to trick them into giving us their land, and we're going to get blankets and rub smallpox all over them and give them smallpox and wipe them out. Then we'll give them alcohol. We'll ply them with alcohol. Fire water, they'll call it. And then we'll kill all the buffalo. And we'll just be these evil fucks that spread like a virus across the continent, wiping them out. But was it really like that? Was it really like that? You know, and it's funny because, just like everything else, all these narratives from the civil rights movement that you hear, when you go back to the original reporting, you find out that, it was just as much peaceful protests in the 1960s as it was during George Floyd. And if you don't preserve this history, then your kids are going to, especially if they go to public schools, are going to grow up learning a version of history that, what does it do? It's meant to deliver a narrative. Deliver the narrative that white people are bad. They don't deserve anything that they have. Everything they've got from being evil and trickery and exploitation. Slavery. White people invented slavery. I mean, certainly the Native Americans weren't practicing slavery. The white man brought slavery to North America. It was unheard of. Slavery was, it was this invention of the white man. Well, if you believe that, you might be a little bit surprised tonight. So let's start at the best place to start, at the beginning. Olive Oatman, she was born in La Harpe, Illinois, in Hancock County, on September 7th, 1837. Now, she was born to a Mormon family that was in Illinois because at the time, a lot of Mormons were moving into Illinois, gathering together because they were trying to figure out where to go after the friction that was happening between the Mormons and the people in Missouri. I've mentioned the execution order that was signed by the governor of Missouri. This is right when she was born. She's born at a time when Mormons are the reason why they're in Utah today is they were fleeing the parts of the East Coast where they used to live, or East Coast / Midwest, right? So she's born in 1837. When she turns 14, there is a break off of the Mormons that's called, this is Olive Oatman, by the way. There's a break off of the Mormons called the Brewsterites. Now, the Brewsterites, and there was actually a few of these kind of break off groups. And the reason why is this was a very bumpy part of the Mormon history. The Mormons were a relatively new religion and led by Joseph Smith. And he was incarcerated and was subsequently killed by a mob right around the time that her family was wanting to go west. And a lot of other Mormons wanted to go west. And there was a lot of different people who wanted, because there was no succession plan put in place for if he died, you know, who would take over, because he was head honcho. So you had Brigham Young, who ended up being the majority of the Mormons went with to Utah. But you had a bunch of these other little guys, right, who said, oh, in fact, including one of whom was Joseph Smith's son, I think, Joseph Smith Jr. But you had this guy named Colin Brewster. His full name was James Colin Brewster, but he went by Colin Brewster. And Colin Brewster, his parents had also joined the Mormon Church in the 1830s. And at age 10, he must have been a precocious youth. At age 10, he began telling his parents that he's also having visions of the angel Moroni, one of the angels Joseph Smith claimed that he had been talking to when he formed the Mormon Church. So at age 10, he starts telling people, oh, I'm also having visitations from angels, and he starts translating like a sequel, basically, to the Book of Mormon. And by the time that Joseph Smith is killed in the prison, and there's all this, you know, everything's kind of up in the air, and oh, who's going to be the next, you know, head Mormon guy? Colin Brewster says, well, I should be the one that takes over because God told me, and, you know, whatever. Right? And again, some, you know, there was a bunch of little splinter groups that split up at this time. The vast majority went with Brigham Young, and the pioneers went to Utah. But you had, I mean, we've talked about a few of these guys. There was one that went to Lake Michigan, and they tried to build a castle. There was another guy, well, I mean, the Warren Jeffs stuff, like in Colorado City with the polygamy and stuff, that was, I think, I think that might have been like the Smiths, like the son or something. And then there was this guy who said, not only did he, you know, write his own book called The Words of Righteousness to All Men, but he said that he was given directions from God that they were to travel to a land called Bushan. It was the promised land. So in 1850, he said, that we're all going to go to Bashan, these Brewsterites, they called themselves. And it's in the Rio Grande Valley, and God has selected that as the new gathering place for the Latter-day Saints. And so let's all get a wagon trail, and we'll go down to Bashan or whatever. It's B-A-S-H-A-N. Unfortunately, all of Oatman's family thought this sounded like a great idea. Her family was quite large. I think they had seven kids. They either had seven kids or six kids, and either way, the mother was very pregnant. Like, she was very pregnant. So she was going to go on this. I mean, this is a long distance to go from Illinois. I'm going to show you a map here in a second. To go from Illinois on foot and by wagon all the way to California, because I think Bashan ended up being like somewhere in the San Joaquin Valley. So we're talking like, you know, over 1,000 miles, well over 1,000 miles by foot and by wagon. They decided to go embark on this trip. Her family, which was Royce Oatman, his wife, and who was very pregnant, and either six or seven kids, I forget which. So they start heading out there, and as you might imagine, there's a lot of desolate areas. If you've ever been through America, especially through Arizona, New Mexico, or even parts of, you know, Texas and all throughout the West, especially depending on what the weather is like, it's rough. It's really rough because you can only, you know, carry so much food and water. And you can only depend so much on surviving on the food that you can get along the way. You can, I guess, do some trading, but there's not a whole lot of... I mean, it's 1850, okay? There's not a lot of people to trade with. And on top of all of this, of course, you have the wonderful Native Americans. The peaceful Native Americans. Which many people, by the way, had no idea. When the white men were first going west by land, it was easy to assume there were no people there. Because there were no signs of civilization. There were no roads. There were no walls, no signs, no cities. And so when you were to come across some of these tribes, it was kind of out of nowhere. Because a lot of these tribes didn't, they were nomadic. And even when they did build houses, I mean, I'll show you in a moment, wouldn't exactly call them houses. I mean, we're really talking about the most primitive people. They didn't have, a lot of Europeans don't realize this. Native Americans did not have horses until Europeans brought horses. They didn't have guns, obviously. We're talking about super primitive people. And so when you imagine like old Western movie Indians riding horses and shooting guns and stuff, they got all that from the European settlers. Prior to encountering European settlers, they were basically really smart monkeys. Let's just be honest. They were really smart monkeys with opposable thumbs. But that's about it. Like, there was no written language. There was no... as you'll see, agriculture to speak of. There was really no civic planning, no social norms. When you don't have a written language, how do you even pass on traditions other than oral traditions, which means whoever, you know, every generation it gets rewritten. So even if you have this wise man, this philosopher, member of your tribe, this high IQ member of your tribe, and he figures out all this shit. Well, if no one remembers it that he tells, or if they tell it inaccurately to the next generation, it's just gone. It's just gone. There's no buildings. There's no two-story buildings. There's no really one-story buildings, aside from some ruins that we'll get into that in a moment, that are ancient and really unrelated to the population that lived there in 1850. So as these pioneers are going across these, you know, vast deserts and these wastelands with no food and no water, A lot of them are saying, this is fucking crazy. This is crazy. We don't know where we're going. We're following some kid that thinks he's like talking to God and he's taking us to some place called Bashan, but he doesn't seem to know where he's going. There's other wagon trains going west to California. Let's just go somewhere that we know exists. Maybe that's a good idea. So little by little, a lot of the people who decided to go with this guy, the Brewsterites, they kind of just peel off and go to start heading to either an established fort or some kind of settlement or, you know, some place that they know there's going to actually be people and not some weird mystery promised land that this weirdo religious guy is telling them to go to. The Oatmans also split off from Brewster. Apparently Royce Oatman was selected to be kind of like the captain to be in charge of the wagon train. And even he was just like, fuck this guy. And when he left, he took a lot of the people with him. They ended up in a place called Maricopa Wells. Maricopa Wells. This is a photo of it from around that time period. It's this middle of fucking nowhere. They had a well in the middle of fucking nowhere, Arizona. It's kind of outside Phoenix, or what is now Phoenix. Phoenix didn't exist back then, or to the extent that it did, it was, you know, it wasn't a city. When they arrived to Maricopa Wells, this is to give an idea of, this is the map I was talking about, to give an idea of how far they had traveled. And again, this is by foot. A lot of guys are walking because not everyone's like packed into the wagon, letting the beasts of burden do all the work. They're walking alongside it because all their shit's in the wagon. And even if you go by car right now, from where they left to Arizona Well or Maricopa Wells, it would be 1,500 miles. It would take 24 hours in a car. It would take about 7 hours to fly there. So it's a long fucking journey. You can see the terrain there too. I mean, they're going through the Rockies basically to get to there, and then they're in this vast fucking desert. So they get there, and a lot of the people that went with the Oatmans are saying, we're done, you know, we're not going to keep going, you know, because they wanted to keep going through to California, take the southern route through California. The Oatmans did, or at least Royce Oatman did. And the rest of the families were like, well, that sounds crazy. And we've heard also that there's a lot of hostile Indians. Weird, huh? Hostile Indians. I thought they were these, you know, one with nature, peaceful people that were, no, not so much. There were these Indians that at the time they called them Apaches. They now call them Yavapai. And I guess they're related to the Apache, but in a lot of the writing, some of which we'll have quotes of tonight, they'll refer to these people as the Apache. But if you want to be ultra specific, it's the Yavapai Indians that are we're talking about in this general area. So there, this is also Maricopa Wells, where a lot of the other families are deciding to not go on to the next spot. The Oatmans continue to travel. This is a 4 days journey today in a vehicle to go from the Maricopa Wells to the site of the incident that we're about to discuss. It's about 2 hour drive in a car. So, but it's about 100 miles. It's 100 miles. And so that kind of a trip in a covered wagon took about 4 days. So Royce, his wife, his kids, and, you know, his pregnant wife and his kids, they stop at a place by the Gila River to get some water. and they start traveling up this incline onto a mesa. When they get to the top, they are accosted by a group of Yavapai Indians. A group of Yavapai Indians walk up to them and say, "Hey man, you got any tobacco? You got any food?" At this point, the Oatmans didn't have a lot of supplies. They'd come all the way from Illinois. They didn't really have the ability to resupply at Maricopa Wells. But they also understood that this was not a request. This was kind of a demand. And so Royce Oatman began to get some tobacco and some bread, whatever he thought they could spare, to give to the Yavapai Indians. At this point, the Yavapai Indians, having never intended to actually just ask and get some stuff when they could have everything, encircled the family and beat them to death with clubs. They beat the father to death, the pregnant mother to death, and all of the children, except for Olive Oatman, who at the time was about age 13, and her little sister, who was about, I believe, 8 years old. They almost beat her brother to death. They thought they beat him to death. When they heard him groaning, they picked him up and threw him off the cliff of the mesa. And they then scalped the family, members of the family, and then decided to start going through their supplies, took what they wanted. And some of that, and part of that included the Olive Oatman and her little sister. And here is Olive Oatman, in her own words, describing this incident.
The attack. I was so bewildered and taken by surprise by the suddenness of their movements and their deafening yells that it was some little time before I could realize the horrors of my situation. When I turned around, opened my eyes, and collected my thoughts, I saw my father, my own dear father, struggling, bleeding, and moaning in the most pitiful manner. Lorenzo was lying with his face in the dust, the top of his head covered with blood, and his ears and mouth bleeding profusely. I looked around and saw my poor mother with her youngest child clasped in her arms, and both of them still, as if the work of death had already been completed. A little distance on the opposite side of the wagon stood little Marianne, with her face covered with her hands, sobbing aloud, and a huge-looking Indian standing over her. The rest were motionless, save a younger brother and my father, all upon the ground, dead or dying. At this sight, a thrill of icy coldness passed over me. I thought I had been struck. My thoughts began to reel and became irregular and confused. I fainted and sank to the earth, and for a while, I know not how long, I was insensible. When I recovered my thoughts, I could hardly realize where I was, though I remembered to have considered myself as having also been struck to the earth, and thought I was probably dying. I knew that all, or nearly all of the family had been murdered. Thus bewildered, confused, half-conscious and half-insensible, I remained a short time, I know not how long, when suddenly I seemed awakened to the dreadful realities around me. My little sister was standing by my side, sobbing and crying, saying, "Mother, oh mother, Olive, mother and father are killed, with all our poor brothers and sisters." I could no longer look upon the scene. Occasionally a low, piteous moan would come from some one of the family as in a dying state. I distinguished the groans of my poor mother, and sprang wildly toward her, but was held back by the merciless savage holding me in his cruel grasp, and lifting a club over my head, threatening me in the most taunting, barbarous manner. I longed to have him put an end to my life. "Oh," thought I, "must I know that my poor parents have been killed by these savages, and I remain alive?" I asked them to kill me, pleaded with them to take my life, but all my pleas and prayers, only excited to laughter and taunts the two wretches to whose charge we had been committed. After these cruel brutes had consummated their work of slaughter, which they did in a few moments, they then commenced to plunder our wagon and the persons of the family whom they had killed. They broke open the boxes with stones and clubs, plundering them of such of their contents as they could make serviceable to themselves. They took off the wagon wheels, or a part of them, tore the wagon covering off from its frame, unyoked the teams and detached them from the wagons, and commenced to pack the little food, with many articles of their plunder, as if preparatory to start on a long journey. Coming to a feather bed, they seized it, tore it open, scattering its contents to the winds, manifesting meanwhile much wonder and surprise, as if in doubt what certain articles of furniture and conveniences for the journey we had with us could be intended for. We descended the hill, not knowing their intentions concerning us, but under the expectation that they would probably take our lives by slow torture.
Ah, yes, the peaceful Yavapai Indians. This is an artist depiction, an early white man who encountered the Yavapai Indians. Look how peaceful they look, and very wise Yavapai Indians. Yes, the Yavapai Indians with their great architecture. See, this is the fucking stupid thing they'll have you believe. Right? They'll have you believe that these people here, this is a Yavapai, this is literally a Yavapai house. It's just a bunch of fucking garbage piled in a pile. It's like a pack rat nest. It's a pack rat nest. And they want you to believe that these people that lived in these pack rat nests, who were complete fucking savages, who had no written language, also were the people that built these cliff dwellings. Like, if you go around in Arizona to, like, the different cliff dwellings, like, on the reservations and stuff, they're like, oh, yes, our ancient sacred sites where our ancestors... No, your ancestors did not build that shit. Your ancestors did not build... Because why aren't you still... If that's what they were building 1,000 fucking years ago, and you went from that to that, what happened exactly? Let's not act like that's what was going on. Whoever these people were, they're not these people. It's basically, this is what would happen if whites go extinct in North America, and this turns into like some kind of fucking Jumanji type situation over here. And then let's say 1,000 years in the future, you know, like the Hitler's UFOs come back from Antarctica and go to conquer North America, and they start looking at like the big stadiums that all that are all falling apart, the ruins of like the Empire State Building. They're gonna be like, I don't get it. How did these people build this stuff? These and the brown people living here will be like, those are our sacred sites. Those are our ancestors built that. Like, that's basically the shit that's going on here. You've got these fucking Indians saying, like, oh, yeah, our ancestors built... The fuck they did. The fuck they did. That's bullshit, and you fucking know it. This is you. This did not build this. This is fucking you. So anyway, they threw him off, Lorenzo, the brother, off the top of the mesa... And he runs off to try to get help, having just barely survived. By the time he encounters white people, you know, it's basically over. The family's all dead, and the two sisters are missing. The fate of the two sisters, well, they should be fine, right? They're in the company of these peaceful Yavapai Indians who just murdered their entire family. I'm sure it was a great, it's a culturally enriching experience for these white girls who had no business being there, right? I'm sure they'll be treated the same way that we're treating the immigrants coming into our country now as payback, right? Let's see what this is from her own. These are her words. What was the journey like with the Yavapai friends that she just made.
The most frightful scenes of butchery and suffering followed into every moment's slumber. Like cattle, we were driven forth to another day's travel, and they whipped Marianne and I into walking the roughest road, if road be a proper term, over which we had yet passed. Twice during the day I gave up and told Mary I must consent to be murdered and left, for proceed I would not with bleeding feet, worn in places almost to the bone and such aching limbs, for bareheaded and shoeless, the Indians having taken off our shoes and head covering. But this they were not inclined to allow. When I could not be driven, I was pushed and hauled along. Stubs, rocks, and gravel-strewn mountainsides hedged up and embittered the travel of the whole day. That day is among the few days of my dreary stay among the savages, marked by the most pain and suffering ever endured. I have since learned that they hurried for fear of the whites, emigrant trains of whom were not unfrequently passing that way.
So they know that if the whites find out what they did, they're fucked, and they scurry away like cockroaches, or like cavemen, really, dragging these girls with them. They make them walk hundreds of miles in bare feet. They took the shoes of the girls because they thought it was funny. And they pressed the girls, again, one of them, like I said, is like 8 years old, until the eight-year-old, after having no food for 4 days and marching nonstop at a breakneck pace because they wanted to avoid being caught by white people, wearing their feet down to basically stubs, you know, like almost literally down to the bone, the little girl passes out. And it's only then that they pick up the little girl and start carrying her while making fun of the white girls because they can't keep up the whole time. And I don't know. I guess that, you know, they felt bad though, right? They wanted to give these kids, you know, they're innocent in all this, right? They're innocent in all this, just like the dreamer kids that get dragged across the border with their illegal immigrant parents. They're innocent in all this, so I'm sure what's going to happen is these Yavapai Indians are going to take these white girls back to their village and then pay for their college. They're going to pay for their college. They're going to give them free medical care for their wounds, and they're going to give them debit cards so they can go and buy food at the Yavapai market. And then they're going to give them free tuition at the Yavapai College. And then they'll give them jobs in the Yavapai industries that are booming in Yavapai country. I'm sure that's what happened, right? And they felt real bad. It was all a big misunderstanding. You know, if only they had a better understanding of the white man, right? They didn't feel threatened by the little girls. Let's see again. What did Olive Oatman think when she was traveling with these Yavapai back to their home in the mountains?
We soon learned that our condition was that of unmitigated slavery, not to the adults merely, but also to the children. Their whimpering, idiotic children of not half a dozen years very soon learned to drive us about with all the authority of an Eastern lord, and these filthy creatures would go in quest of occasions, seemingly to gratify their love of command, and any want of hurried attention to them was visited upon us by punishment, either by whipping us or the withholding of our food. Besides, the adults of the tribe enjoyed the sport of seeing us thus forced into submission to their children. They invented modes, and seemed to create necessities of labor, that they might gratify themselves by taxing us to the utmost, and even took unwarranted delight in whipping us on beyond our strength. And all their requests and exactions were couched in the most insulting and taunting language and manner, as it then seemed, and as they had the frankness, soon to confess, to fume their hate against the race to whom we belonged.
Oh, so they had a unending burning hatred of white men. And they delighted in having, as she called them, their idiot children order them around. They were slaves, and they made it very clear they were slaves. And they delighted, they would, in fact, they would come up with work that was unnecessary simply so they could order them to do things. And they thought it was the funniest shit in the world having power over the white man. They thought it was the funniest shit in the world that they could order white people around to do whatever they fucking wanted. Now, the thing is, massacres were not uncommon. This is not an isolated incident. Again, there's lots of people that are trying to rewrite this story and act as if, oh, it's exaggerated or whatever. Not really. This kind of thing, I looked in the newspaper archives for just Indian massacre and found result after result after result during this time period of Indian massacres, where you just have settlers going across the, you know, going to California, going to Oregon, going to Utah, going wherever. And this is just this little time period, and you have story after story after story. Here's one later from Oregon. The PMSS Columbia Captain Dahl arrived Thursday night at 11 o'clock in 2.5 days from Portland OT. Indian massacre on the plains. The Portland Standard of the 23rd learns from Mr. Banton, a gentleman having just crossed the plains and who arrived in that city on last Tuesday week, that a terrible Indian massacre had been committed upon the emigrants to this season, or of this season. He reports as follows. About the middle of June, an immigrant train bound for California, consisting of 300 men, women, and children, were attacked at Devil's Gate on the Sweetwater River, 6 miles from Independence Rock, by Cheyenne Sioux Indians, killing 150 of the company and capturing their stock, provisions, clothing, etc. The remainder of the party succeeded in reaching Salt Lake City through, though in starving condition, some of them having been 8 days without provisions. Among those who were killed were General Lane's brother and family. This kind of thing happened all the time. You had, in fact, you had lots of fur trappers and explorers, people who weren't even intending on, you know, settling the area. They were just trying to map out the area or whatever, who were, in fact, one guy who I think that, was it Jebediah Smith? That guy's an absolute fucking Chad. We might have to do a stream on that guy. Fucking beat up it, or he didn't beat up, but like he survived the grizzly bear attack where like the grizzly bear had his fucking head in his mouth and ripped part of his like scalp off. And so like he went the rest of his life like combing his hair over the big like grizzly bear wound. But yeah, like hardcore fucking naturalist types that are just going around, and then they get attacked by like 30 Indians. And this is a common thing. And this is not an exaggerated instance where you have, you know, a bunch of Indians, especially, here's the thing that people, this is another big myth. Another big myth is that the Indians, oh, they're one with nature. They're one with the environment. Oh, they only use what's necessary, right? They're so good about managing resources. Oh, we use every part of the buffalo and this kind of bullshit, right? Well, the truth is they sucked at managing resources, and they were often fucking starving to death. They were often fucking having massive plagues. They were often having lots of issues that come along with being essentially wild animals in a inhospitable environment, especially like places in Arizona, like the Harcahala Mountains. Okay, so this is the reality that when you see these people crossing through with all these gibbs, they've got all these goodies in these wagons. You know, you're gonna go attack the fucking wagons, and especially when you got women that look like the fucking Yavapai women. You're gonna rape the white women. You're gonna steal their shit. It's a tale as old as time. It's same old, same old. See, the bottom line is, the huge difference is, and always will be, white people have a civilizing effect on brown people, and never the other way around. Never the other way around. So anyway, what happens when this is a photo of some Yavapai. Look at their awesome house they've got. See, look at all those. Look, it's like sticks. It sticks. And their clothes, by the way, they didn't dress like this prior to encountering, and obviously they didn't have rifles either, prior to encountering the white man. They never learned how to make fabric. They would have, like leaves and shit covering their dicks. And like that was it. But once they encountered white men, they could trade for like blankets and canvas and stuff like that. And so that's why these guys look like they're wearing clothes, because they didn't make any of those clothes. And by the way, same goes for like a lot of these tribes in this area. So Olive Oatman and her sister Marianne, what do they observe upon arriving at the Yavapai camp?
They are human, but live like brutes. They seem totally destitute of all those noble and generous traits of life which distinguish and honor civilized people. They are content to pass their days without ambition, save of war and conquest. They live the mere creatures of passion, blind and callous to all those ennobling aims and purposes that are the true and pleasing inspiration of rational existence. Rapine and lust prey upon them at home, and war is fast wasting them abroad. In their social state, the more they are studied, the more do they become an object of disgust and loathing. There was no beauty, no loveliness, no attractions in the country possessed by these unlovely creatures to make it pleasant. Most of them are sunk in an ignorance that forbids any aspiration or ambition to reach or fire their natures, an ignorance that knows no higher mode of life than theirs, and that looks with jealousy upon every nation and people, save the burrowing tribes that skulk and crawl among these mountains and ravines.
How about that? How about that? They are people that look upon everyone around them with jealousy, because they have achieved things that they would never be able to achieve. And so they hate them. Here's a quote from the author. By the way, the things that I'm playing with that, the girl reading, those are all direct quote. This is not the author's interpretation. Those are all quotes from Olive Oatman herself. This, however, is a quote from the author of the book that compiled everything. How strange the life of these savages. Of their past history, how little is known. This much we do know. There are large tracts of country now occupied by large and numerous tribes of the red race, living in all the filth and degradation of an unmitigated heathenism, and without any settled system of laws or social regulations. They were literally really smart monkeys. And like monkeys, sure, there is some kind of social hierarchy. There's some kind of power structure. There is some kind of socialization that's going on. Depending on how you define civilization, you could sort of say that there's a form of, primitive though it might be, some sort of civilization. And really, there's not a huge contrast, aside from some minor technological differences, between these Yavapais and literal monkeys. So the Yavapais ram a bunch of sticks together and call it a house. Am I supposed to be impressed? The Yavapais are hunter-gatherers. There's almost no agriculture going on, which is why they're always starving to death. That, and they chose to live in one of the shittiest parts of America, like in terms of being able to survive. And here they are. We're supposed to compare this with what's happening to us now. we're supposed to act as if there's any comparison whatsoever that can be made? She continues about the Apaches, or she calls them Apaches. They're Yavapai again. It's used interchangeably.
These Apaches were without any settled habits of industry. They tilled not. They ate worms, grasshoppers, and reptiles. For whole days, when scarcely a morsel for another meal was in the camp, would those stout, robust, lazy lumps of a degraded humanity lounge in the sun or by the gurgling spring. At noon, in the shade or on the shelves of the mountains surrounding, utterly reckless of their situation, or of the doom their idleness might bring upon the whole tribe.
Basically describing zero impulse control, no ability to look into the future, no ability to look into the future and plan, no ability to wonder if the consequences of your actions might impact others, very little sympathy. Here's another quote from Olive. Quote, the Indians would congregate on evenings when one of them would entertain the company with a narration of the adventures of his youthful days. On one of these occasions, an old Indian spoke as follows. I had heard often of the white people. I longed to see one. I was told by my father one day that I might, with some of the warriors of the tribe, go on a hunt to the north, and also that we would probably find some white people. If so, that we must kill them and bring in their scalps with any white captive girls we could find. We had so many, counting his fingers up to three, or bows, and so many, 48 arrows each. So they were bred to hate white people, to kill them on sight, to take their scalps. And look, I'll be honest, obviously not every fucking tribe was like this, but we live in an environment where we're supposed to act like no tribe was like this. When the Yavapais were 100% like this, and they were not unique in this. Hatred of the white people, their violent tendencies, and the danger they pose to everyone around them. And this idea that the white people brought slavery to North America is ridiculous. Because not only would the Yavapai take white slave girls, lots of tribes took slaves from other tribes prior to white people even showing up. The concept of slavery was not a foreign concept. In fact, it was such a normal concept that one of the other tribes that they did trade with was called the Mojave tribe. Now, the Mojave tribe saw these girls and they wanted the white slave girls. And there's much made about this in the revisionist versions of tellings of this story, where they try to make it sound like the nice, peaceful Mojaves came and they felt bad for the treatment that they were receiving under the brutality of the Yavapai Indians. And so they really wanted to help them out and rescue them from the Yavapai. But they didn't rescue them from the Yavapai. They bought them as their slaves from the Yavapai. Because the Mojave also understood the concept of slavery. They had slaves. They wanted two more. Two little white girls that the Yavapai had. And so they worked out a deal. For the price of two horses, some vegetables, some beads, and some blankets, they purchased two white girl slaves from the Yavapai. And they want to gloss over this fact. In fact, it's kind of funny. when I was just doing some research, I knew that they were purchased, and I'd read like what it was, and I couldn't remember what it was, so I went to ChatGPT, which lies all the time. Never rely on it 100% ever. But I just was like, oh, what was, I asked ChatGPT, like, what was the price that the Mojave, you know, paid for Olive Oatman and Marianne Oatman from the Yavapai? And ChatGPT did this like 5-paragraph answer without telling me what they paid, basically saying, well, it wasn't really like they paid for them. They traded for them. It wasn't really like they were buying them. It was like, you know, and then a lot of people, they say the Mojaves were actually, they were kind of nicer to the girls. And so it's like, it was paragraphs of them, of it not answering the question. I had to go back and find it in the book because it wouldn't fucking just tell me that it was 2 horses, some vegetables, beads, and blankets. And there's YouTube video after YouTube video after YouTube video trying to make the same sorry fucking excuses. Like, oh, no, the chief's wife felt really bad when she found out that they had these white girls they were abusing. So she, you know, she said, oh, we should get them as our slaves. It will be nicer masters. Which, even if that's the case, slavery was still part of the equation. It wasn't, let's free these white girls and give them back to the white people. In fact, maybe there's a reward, right? We're the Mojave Indians. We have interactions with the white people from time to time. We know where they have settlements. We could, I mean, if this is the case, right? If we have, oh, the bleeding heart Mojaves. They felt so bad that the Yavapais were mistreating these white girls, and they just wanted what was best for them. Why wouldn't they, let's say, purchase their freedom instead of purchase them as slaves? And if you know anything about the early writings of the Mojave Indians, well, it's easy to deduce why they would want 2 white girls. Because the Mojaves were like hedonistic fucks. Like they were like in the open. Because again, when your house is like a pile of sticks, everyone can see you fucking. And when you don't have anything to do all day because you're not exactly the most industrious people, as she is over and over reiterated, to the extent where, you know, as you'll see, to starvation, they just fuck all day. And when your women look like Yavapai women or Mojave women, well, let's buy these white chicks. So, and the other thing they leave out, these people that like to claim that the Mojave rescued them. Yeah, well, if they did, that why'd they make them walk on foot for 10 days, 350 miles, and then whip them when they slowed down and make fun of them, which is exactly what Olive Oatman recounts. And what did she find when she arrived? Well, again, Olive Oatman will also admit, yeah, they weren't as fucking sadistic as the Yavapai Indians. They weren't just basically torturing us for fun like the Yavapai Indians were. But they were a backward, primitive, superstitious people celebrating not the freeing of 2 people that they were handing their freedom over to. They were celebrating the acquisition of white slaves.
Their conduct during that night of wild excitement was very different from that by which our coming among the Apaches was celebrated. That was one of selfish, iron-hearted fiends, glutting over a murderous, barbarous deed of death and plunder. This was that of a company of indolent, superstitious, and lazy heathen, adopting the only method which their darkness and ignorance would allow to signify their joy over the return of kindred and the delighted purchase of 2 foreign captives. They placed us out upon the green and in the light of a large, brisk fire and kept up their dancing, singing, jumping, and shouting until near the break of day.
So they're whooping and hollering and celebrating the acquisition of the white girls that they have brought into the tribe. They immediately, even though the illustrations don't necessarily show this for obvious reasons, in the book they describe that one of the first things they do is they rip the clothes off of the white girls and force them to wear what the Mojave girls wear, which is like a grass skirt and like no top, just a grass skirt, which is exactly what they would be wearing for the rest of the time that they were with the Mojave Indians. And the Mojave Indians were, to give you like some context of like location, it was like 350 miles northwest of where the Yavapai Indians were. You know, so basically think, well, the Mojave Desert, you know, by California, like the western southwestern part of California, bordering Arizona and Nevada. So they show up, and while they do find them to be less violent, they find them to be really stupid and wasteful, and which is ultimately going to become a huge problem for the girls and, well, and for the Mojave. Here's, again, this is the author, not Olive Oatman. Here's a quote from the author discussing this, quote, "Every day brought to their ears expressions casually dropped, showing their spite and hate to the white race. They would question their captives closely, seeking to draw from them any discontent they might feel in their present condition. They taunted them in a less ferocious manner than the Apaches," talking about the Yavapais, "but with every evidence of an equal hate about the good-for-nothing whites. But they understood that these good-for-nothing whites had a better understanding of agriculture, that they were more successful, that they were, by most measures, a superior people. And so, while they liked to talk shit to them and make fun of them for being white all the time, they were also kind of embarrassingly curious about how the white man was able to produce so much more when it came to agriculture, or even just, you know, in terms of domesticated animals, how they were able to have such nice stuff compared to the Mojaves. So they didn't understand that, you know, they wanted the girls to try to explain, you know, which is weird, right? Because the Indians were supposed to be the masters of sustainability. They're the masters of being one with nature and understanding all the seasons. And, you know, they're these like fucking in tune with the earth, you know, motherfuckers. And yet, when it came to how they grew plants, not only did they never plant enough, because as Olive Oatman puts it, they were too lazy. That they scarcely planted enough, like they planted like a fifth of what they actually needed. But they also didn't understand watering crops or irrigation, excuse me, or anything like that. And the only time they actually had any kind of production of the crops they planted was when the river would flood and overflow. And they thought that that was happening because they were praying to their gods for it to happen. So they would just plant seeds, not enough seeds even, in the area around the river, and then pray that the river would overflow magically and water the crops and make them grow. And if it did, if they didn't, then they didn't. Like that was their, and they were asking them like, oh, hey, here's again, this is Mojave kid and maybe grandparent there. Again, they also didn't wear clothes until they encountered white people. So a lot of these photos are the either late 1800s, early 1900s, once they'd encountered white people and traded for clothes, because they saying that, you know, they wore, the women wore grass skirts, and like that was it. Grass skirt, boom, done. Cloth, you know, wardrobe over. And the men essentially same thing. It was like you know, like a loinclothy version of a grass skirt. And like, that was it. That's all they wore. You know, literally like a tiny step up the evolutionary ladder, like a tiny, like two or three rungs up from wild animals. You know, they had the opposable thumbs. They had the opposable thumbs so they could like play with tools to some extent, you know, kill things with sharp sticks and muck around in the dirt with seeds. But that was it. So they would ask the girls, like, you know, how do you guys do it? How do you make, I don't understand. And they would try to explain.
We found the Mojaves accustomed to the tillage of the soil to a limited extent and in a peculiar way. They had but a few notions, and these were crude, about agriculture. They were utterly without skill or art in any useful calling. When we first arrived among them, the wheat sown the previous fall had come up and looked green and thrifty, and yet it was not sufficient to maintain one-fifth of their population. They spent more time in raising 20 spears of wheat from one hill than was necessary to have cultivated 1 acre, with the improvements they might and should have learned in the method of doing it. It was a season of great rejoicing when the Colorado River overflowed, as it was only when it overflows that they could rely upon their soil for a crop. They were very anxious to know how breaking up of the soil would make grain grow, of what use it was. We told them of milking the cows, and how our white people mowed the grass and fattened cattle, and many other things. I frequently told them how grain and cattle and fowls would abound if such good land was under the control of the whites. This would sometimes kindle their wrath and taunts, and again at other times their curiosity. One day several of them were gathered, and questioning about our former homes and the white nation and the way by which a living was made, etc. I told them of plowing the soil. They then wanted to see the figure of a plow. I accordingly, with sticks and marks in the sand, made as good a plow as a girl of 15 would be expected, perhaps, to make out of such material, drew the oxen and hitched them to my plow and told them how it would break the soil. This feasted their curiosity a while, but ended in a volley of scorn and mockery to me and the race of whites, and a general outburst of indignant taunts about their meanness. I told them of the abundance that rewards white labor, while they had so little.
So she tried to teach them. This is a 15-year-old white girl who knows more about agriculture than these ancient people who have been living off the land for eons. She tries to explain, hey, you know, this is how you can make a plow. This is, you know, I'll try to, like, I mean, I'm a 15-year-old pioneer girl. I'm kind of limited in how I, you know, I don't understand all the mechanics of it, but I've seen one, so I'll try to, like, show you what it looks like. And they would laugh at her or get mad. They'd get mad because they wouldn't understand it. Or they'd make fun of her because, oh, that's just silly white people. It's retarded. We're just going to get seeds and just haphazardly throw them around the Colorado River and hope that it floods when we pray to Mugmugmog or whatever the fuck. So it's funny because as much as they make fun of whites, they don't know, they don't understand the basics of agriculture. They don't know where whites even come from. They don't even know that there's an ocean that exists. They had to ask her, like, oh, what is this? We heard there's a thing called an ocean, and you guys come from the other side of it, and what is that all about? And so she tries to explain to these people. This is, again, this is actual photos of Mojave Indians. But again, this is probably early 1900s, maybe late 1800s, but after they've already encountered white people, obviously, or, you know, because, you know, cameras. I don't think that camera was manufactured in the Navajo Nation.
Bad as they are very curious to know the secret of the success and increase of the whites. They would gather about us frequently in large numbers, and ply their curious questions with eagerness and seeming interest, asking how many of the white folks there were, how far the big ocean extended, and on being told of the two main oceans, they asked if the whites possessed the other big world on the east of the Atlantic, if there were any Indians there. They wanted to know how women were treated, and if a man was allowed more than one wife, inquired particularly how and by what means a subsistence was gained by us. In this latter question, we could discern an interest that did not inspire any of their other queries. We tried to tell them of the knowledge the whites possessed, of the well-founded belief they had, that the stars above us were peopled by human beings, and of the fact that the distance to these far-off worlds had been measured by the whites. They wished to know if any of us had been there. This they asked in a taunting manner, exhibiting in irony and sarcasm their incredulity as to the statement, over which they made much sport and ridicule. I found the months and years in which I had been kept in school not altogether useless in answering their questions. I told them that the earth turned round every 24 hours, and also of its traveling about the sun every year. They would tell us, however, that an evil spirit reigned among the whites, and that he was leading them on to destruction. They seemed sincere in their belief that there were scarcely any of the whites that could be trusted, but that they had evil assistants, which made them great and powerful. Particularly, they would question us as to the number of the Americanos, this term they obtained among the Mexicans. When we told them of the number of the whites, and of their rapid increase, they were apparently incredulous, and some of them would become angry, and accuse us of lying, and wishing to make them believe a lie.
So they were literal flat earthers. They were the Mojave were literal flat earthers. And they would react exactly like flat earthers when she would try to explain, like, no, it's a globe. You see, it's a, you know, rotates every 24 hours and it goes around. They're like, no, it doesn't. My personal incredulity says it doesn't, and so it doesn't. You are full of tricks. It's all trickery. Oh, it's all true, which is funny, right? Because actually I've heard flat earthers say that white people thought that the earth was flat until like the 1920s, or until like, like Disney or something, right? Some stupid shit like NASA, and then Disney, and then like, you know, like the Satanist. Or no, this is a pioneer fucking girl that's 15 years old, been kidnapped and raped repeatedly by fucking Indians, and she knows more about the nature of the universe than your fucking dumbass with access to the internet, you stupid fuck. And so... But the Mojave, imagine that. You've been kidnapped by a bunch of fucking brown earther, flat earthers. And when she tries to help and she tries to explain it, they're like, ah, sounds like bullshit. That's fake. That's totally, you're a devil. You're a devil. You're trying to trick us with your NASA. Your NASA trickery. I bet you work for NASA. Yet again, proof that if you're a flat earther, you're not white. You're not white. But again, they had a lot of contempt for white people. They couldn't understand it because like I said, their mind worked the same way that flat earthers did. Anything they couldn't wrap their head around had to be a lie. Had to be a lie. Here's a quote from the author, quote, "With all their boasting and professed contempt for whites, and with all their bright traditions and prophecies, according to which their day of triumph and power is near at hand, yet they are not without premonitions of a sad and fatal destiny. They are generally dejected and cast down. The tone of their everyday life, as well as sometimes actual sayings, indicate a pressing fear and a harassing foreboding." Because they knew their days were numbered. Deep down, they knew they were wrong. Deep down, they knew they couldn't, they could scoff and laugh. And that, look, this is probably why they wanted those white slaves. So they could exactly do that. They could get all that frustration out by ordering them around, making fun of the white girls, and pretending like that this wasn't happening. That what they were saying was just like crazy talk. And it's funny because even with all these writings of Olive Oatman, again, there are people today still trying to follow that narrative, the very narrative that the Mojaves were putting forward. That the white people were evil and up to no good, and there was the Mojaves, they were peaceful and happy. And these revisionists will come through with, you know, talking about lies about, and they never have proof of it, by the way. It's always like, well, clearly she's lying. That didn't happen. She's just lying. And you look for evidence, because I tried to find evidence. I tried to find evidence because I found a lot of people saying that, oh, this was an exaggerated whatever. Okay, well, what's the evidence it's exaggerated? And there never is any evidence. It's just, well, it sounds exaggerated. So you're basically like the Mojave Indians. Oh, that sounds crazy. I can't believe that. One of the things they will say is they'll say, well, she could have escaped. Why didn't she try to escape? You know, glossing over the fact that she's a 15-year-old girl with her 9-year-old little sister who's dying, by the way. She has been abused, you know, since the Yavapais had to walk hundreds and hundreds of miles after already making the long trip just to get to Arizona with her family. Beaten, abused, repeatedly raped her little sister. And then they say, well, why is it that she never left? Well, because where was she going to fucking go? They had to walk 350 fucking miles just to get to this little Indian encampment from the Yavapai ones. And she doesn't know where the fuck she is. She doesn't know where the fuck... How would you know? I wouldn't know where the fuck I was. They didn't have fucking GPS. What's she supposed to do? And they'll say, well, what about when the surveyors, because there was a white surveyor or a group of white surveyors that went out there and spent a week with the Mojaves. So there you can see the grass skirts the women are wearing. And this is what they, in fact, this is closer to what they probably looked like at the time that the girls were with the Mojaves, where they're literally just wearing grass skirts. The women are wearing grass skirts. The men are wearing, I guess, it's basically a grass skirt, just slightly different in shape. And they'll say, well, there was these white people that went and they stayed there a week. Why didn't they say anything? Well, these white surveyors also never saw any white people while they were there. They never saw any white people, so most likely the Mojave, who often say they're afraid that the white people are going to find out they have white girls, they probably hid them for a week. And in fact, Olive Oatman said that at times they would make a dye out of the bark of mesquite trees and try to make their skin and their hair look dark so that they would blend in with the tribe and more believably in case someone did see them. So their big evidence is some white people stayed with the Mojaves for the week and didn't see any white girls. And so clearly Olive Oatman and her little sister didn't want to be found. They'll also point out, you know, the most striking feature when you talk about Olive Oatman, the tattoos on her face. They'll say, well, you know, they gave her a face tattoo, so clearly she wanted to be there, or else why would she have this face tattoo? Right? They wouldn't just give her a face tattoo unless she wanted a face tattoo. Right? I mean, face tattoo. And they'll say, look, I mean, look, here's look at the beautiful Mojave women. Here's a beautiful Mojave woman. They'll say, look at the beautiful Mojave women. They get face tattoos. She got a face tattoo. So clearly, and they even have the balls to use this word, she assimilated. Like a good immigrant, she came to the Mojaves and assimilated. Right? Because, right? Assimilation. Well, that's weird because Olive Oatman actually addresses that.
One day the chief's wife bade us go out upon the yard and told us that the physicians were going to put marks on our faces. It was with much difficulty that we could at first understand what was their design. We soon, however, by the motions accompanying the commands of the wife of the chief, came to understand that they were going to tattoo our faces. I ventured to plead with them for a few moments that they would not put those ugly marks upon our faces, but it was in vain. To all our expostulations, they only replied in substance that they knew why we objected to it, that we expected to return to the whites, and we would be ashamed of it then, but that it was their resolution we should never return, and that as we belonged to them, we should wear their kiechuk, tattoo. They said further that if we should get away, and they should find us among other tribes, or if some other tribes should steal us, they would by this means know us. They then pricked the skin in small regular rows on our chins with a very sharp stick, until they bled freely. They then dipped these same sticks in the juice of a certain weed that grew on the banks of the river, and then in the powder of a blue stone that was to be found in low water, and pricked this fine powder into these lacerated parts of the face. They told us this could never be taken from the face, and that they had given us a different mark from the one worn by their own females, as we saw, but the same with which they marked all their own captives, and that they could claim us in whatever tribe they might find us.
Oh, so in other words, basically, they tattooed her face because she, for, maybe for along the same lines of why they tattooed the face of their women, because she was property. Not only was she property, they thought that if they tattooed her face, she'd be too ashamed to go see, be seen by white people. Because believe it or not, she is at least historically known as the first white woman in North America to ever have a tattoo. So it wasn't exactly a socially acceptable thing back in 1850-something to have a face tattoo as a woman. It was not a common thing in 1850 to have, I mean, she was literally the only white woman on the continent of North America to have a tattoo, and it's on her fucking face. And when they tattooed her sister too, so not one of two white women, right? But also, they point out that it's in case she did get away and another tribe encountered her, they would know, oh, well, she belongs to the Mojaves. So we need to go get her back to the Mojaves. It's a brand. It's a fucking brand. And yet you have these Indian apologists, many of whom are obviously descended of these people, who try to make it sound like, oh no, that shows that she was, she was assimilated to the tribe. Well, that's weird, because if she was assimilated to the tribe, why'd they call her Spanza? You know, it's funny, because the name Spanza, according to Michael Soce, who was, he's dead now, but he was the former director of the Colorado Indian Museum, who was one of these people trying to claim, oh, this story's, it's all made up. Clearly, she liked being there. And one of his reasons for knowing this as a Mojave Indian was that they called her Spanza. Not just the tattoo, but they called her Spanza. You know what? Spanza means rotting vagina. Or wounded vagina. Which means to him that she was sexually active. For them to give her that name. Sounds like she's assimilating, right? That they love this girl. That they're, hey, look, here comes rotting vagina. She's one of the bros. Rotting vagina, wounded vagina. That's how I know she's assimilated to the culture and that everyone thinks that she's one of us, as we call her rotting vagina, or wounded vagina. In fact, Michael Soce tried to imply that, it probably meant that she was a whore. She was probably a whore. Maybe you mean sex slave? Is that maybe a more accurate way of putting it, you stupid fuck? monkey? In fact, he went further. He said, you know, it might even mean she did not live up to the grooming and hygiene standards of the Mojave Indians. I'm not fucking shitting you. So clearly she's lying. She's making it all up because they tattooed her face and called her wounded vagina. Another story they like to gloss over and act as if it didn't happen is she talks about one of the slaves. This was not a white slave. It was an Indian slave, female slave, that did escape or tried to. And what happened to this slave?
When she went out that night, she plunged immediately into the river to prevent them from tracking her. She swam several miles that night and then hid herself in a willow wood. Thinking that they would be in close pursuit, she resolved to remain there until they should give up hunting for her. Here she remained nearly 2 days, and her pursuers were very near her several times. She then started and swam where the river was not too rapid and shallow, when she would out and bound over the rocks. In this way, traveling only in the night, she had gone near 130 miles. She was, as she supposed, safely hid in a cave, waiting the return of night, when the Yuma found her. A noisy meeting was called, and they spent the night in one of their victory dances. They would dance around her, shout in her ears, spit in her face, and show their threats of a murderous design. The next morning, a post was firmly placed in the ground, and about 8 feet from the ground, a crossbeam was attached. They then drove large, rough wooden spikes through the palms of her hands, and by these they lifted her to the cross and drove the spikes into the soft wood of the beam, extending her hands as far as they could. They then, with pieces of bark stuck with thorns, tied her head firmly back to the upright post, drove spikes through her ankles, and for a time left her in this condition. They then commenced running round her in regular circles, hallooing, stamping, and taunting like so many demons in the most wild and frenzied manner. After a little while, several of them supplied themselves with bows and arrows, and at every circlet would hurl one of these poisoned instruments of death into her quivering flesh. Occasionally she would cry aloud and in the most pitiful manner. This awakened from that mocking, heartless crowd the most deafening yells. Placing me with their Cochopa captives near the sufferer, they bid us keep our eyes upon her until she died. This they did, as they afterward said, to exhibit to me what I might expect if they should catch me attempting to escape.
So they killed the woman. And look, there could be people that say, oh, that sounds a little hyperbolic. Sounds a little Christian-y. And maybe it was. Maybe there's some artistic license in terms of how she describes it. I don't know. Or maybe it's not like it's some high-tech thing to nail someone to a fucking piece of wood and shoot arrows at them either. But either way, they're killing the slaves that get away. And in fact, her sister dies in this captivity of the Mojave. Her little sister, who had been abused brutally by the Yavapai, who had been marched all over the fucking Southwest, who had been malnutritioned and basically just on the brink of death for like years, really, at this point, fell into a sorry state when, because of the inability of the Mojave to produce enough food for their tribe, these Mojave, who are supposed to be, again, one with nature, the perfect sustainability model of human beings. Well, they didn't do a very good job 1 year at praying to Nguyen or whoever the fuck, because the Colorado River did not flood and the crops didn't grow and they ran out of food. And because they ran out of food, well, of course, when people start starving to death, you're not exactly going to be feeding your slaves as well.
It would be impossible to put upon paper any true idea of my feelings and sufferings during this trip on account of Mary. I feared she would not live, and I found on reaching the village that she had materially failed and had been furnished with scarcely food enough to keep her alive. I traveled whole days together in search of the eggs of blackbirds for Marianne. These eggs at seasons were plenty, but not then. I cherished for a short time the hope that she might, by care and nursing, be kept up until spring, when we could get fish. The little store we had brought in was soon greedily devoured, and with the utmost difficulty could we get a morsel. The ground was searched for miles, and every root that could nourish human life was gathered. The Indians became reckless and quarrelsome, and with unpardonable selfishness, each would struggle for his own life in utter disregard of his fellows. Marianne failed fast. She and I were whole days at a time without anything to eat. Often would Mary say to me, "I am well enough, but I want something to eat. Then I should be well." I could not leave her overnight. Roots there were none I could reach by day and return. And when brought in, our lazy lords would take them for their own children. Several children had died, and more were in a dying state. Each death that occurred was the occasion of a night or day of frantic howling and crocodile mourning. Mary was weak and growing weaker, and I gave up in despair. I sat by her side for a few days, most of the time only begging of the passers-by to give me something to keep Mary alive. My sister would not complain, but beg for something to eat. She seemed now to regard life no longer as worth preserving, and she kept constantly repeating expressions of longing to die and be removed from a gloomy captivity to a world where no tear of sorrow dims the eye of innocence and beauty. She called me to her side one day and said, "Olive, I shall die soon. You will live and get away. Father and mother have got through with sufferings and are now at rest. I shall soon be with them and those dear brothers and sisters." She then asked me to sing, and she joined her sweet, clear voice, without faltering, with me, and we tried to sing the evening hymn we had been taught at the family altar. "The day is past and gone, the evening shades appear," etc. My grief was too great. The struggling emotions of my mind I tried to keep from her, but could not. She then asked me to sing the hymn commencing. I was faint and unable to stand upon my feet long at a time. My cravings for food were almost uncontrollable. And at the same time, among unfeeling savages, to watch her gradual but sure approach to the veil of death from want of food that their laziness alone prevented us having in abundance, this was a time and scene upon which I can only gaze with horror, and the very remembrance of which I would blot out if I could. She lingered thus for several days. She suffered much, mostly from hunger. Often did I hear, as I sat near her weeping, some Indian coming near break out in a rage, because I was permitted to spend my time thus with her, that they had better kill Mary, then I could go, as I ought to be made to go, and dig roots and procure food for the rest of them. One day, during her singing, quite a crowd gathered about her and seemed much surprised. Some of them would stand for whole hours and gaze upon her countenance as if enchained by a strange sight, and this while some of their own kindred were dying in other parts of the village. The next morning, as I sat near my sister, shedding my tears in my hands, she called me to her side and said, "I am willing to die. Oh, I shall be so much better off there." And her strength failed. She tried to sing, but was too weak. A number of the tribe, men, women, and children, were about her, the chief's wife watching her every moment. She died in a few moments after her dying words quoted above. She sank to the sleep of death as quietly as sinks the innocent infant to sleep in its mother's arms.
And so Marianne succumbed to the starvation at age 10. And yet they should have left the village and walked 350 fucking miles, right? In some magical direction where they would know exactly where to go. When the Indians made it clear, "We will not go with you if you leave. You will just die in the wilderness." They also make, the revisionists will also make it sound as if they did her some kind of favor. You see, the Mojaves would cremate their dead. But because they were such generous people, they allowed her to bury her sister instead of cremate her sister, as was the white man's custom. But as she describes the scenario, she describes it as weirdly, almost like there was a voyeuristic aspect to it. That they all just kind of gathered around, not in sadness or in solidarity to mourn with her, but out of like curiosity. Like, oh, so this is what white people do, like people at a fucking zoo. Amused by her digging this hole and putting her 10-year-old sister in the hole and burying her. Here's a quote from the author. Quote, "It was feared that with the deep-seated hostility which they bore to the white race and the contempt which they manifested to their white captives, the girls might return to their own people and tell the tale of their sufferings in captivity, and thus bring down upon them the vengeance of the whites, that all these causes might induce them to sell their captives to the most inaccessible tribe, and thus consign them to a captivity upon which the light of hope or prospect of escape could not shine." Now, what happened was, eventually, there were rumors of white girls that were slaves of an Indian tribe. And the authorities at Fort Yuma heard these rumors and didn't really act. Some say, you know, they neglected their duty as the whites out there, and you know, with a fort, you know, they, if they have any responsibility at that fort, it should be to protect the white people. Whether or not they dismissed the rumors because they thought they were just rumors or they were neglectful, who knows? But eventually there was some bad press about them ignoring these rumors of the white slave girls. And so the authorities at Fort Yuma sent out messengers to all the known Indian tribes and said that we will, you know, basically they offered a deal. We'll either buy the freedom of the white girls or we'll kill you. So it's the good old fashioned, what do you want, silver or lead? A messenger by the name of Francisco went to the Mojaves and worked out a deal. And for a box of beads and a white horse and some blankets, Fort Yuma purchased the freedom of Olive Oatman. Olive Oatman was then marched on foot back to civilization. Upon encountering the first white man she had seen in, I believe, 5 years at this point, because she was still just wearing the grass skirt, and that was it, because that's all she had when she left. She lunged to the ground and covered herself and said she wouldn't go a foot further until they brought her a dress, because she didn't want to walk into the white civilization dressed like, you know, like a fucking animal. So they rode back to the fort. The officers got a dress for her, sent it back up. They dressed her up like a human again and brought her back into civilization, where they told her that her brother had survived and she was reunited with her brother. She then later went on to go to school, and she married a rancher and settled in Texas after writing her book that we've been listening to quotes from. She never recanted anything that she had said. She never had any children of her own because it's theorized that because of the brutality of the rapes that she and her sister were subjected to by the Yavapai, certainly, and most likely the Mojave as well. She was unable to have children. She ended up adopting, I think, a kid or two with her husband, John Fairchild, when she lived in Texas. But they never had any kids of their own. The revisionists, of course, they say, like, oh, she had, like, a secret husband and secret kids or whatever, but, like, she never made any attempt to try to contact that person if they existed. And again, let's just say that she did have a Mojave husband and kids. They were probably rape kids, let's just be honest. It was probably, coercive at best, all right? You're literally a slave. But there's no evidence that even exists. That's just, again, all the people that want to rewrite history, they have zero evidence of anything like that. Other than, this lady once said it. It's like, okay, well. The tattoo, of course, was very striking. It made her kind of famous. It was kind of a big story at the time. They named two different towns in Arizona after her. There was Olive, Arizona, which... I believe is around Blythe, California now. It doesn't exist anymore. It's like a ghost town. And then Oatman, Arizona, which is near the Arizona-Nevada border. I've actually been there. It's kind of like a tourist trap. It's like an old abandoned mining town. Well, not abandoned. I mean, there's people live there now. But it's very all of Oatman themed. And there's donkeys everywhere for some reason. If you've ever been there. In fact, they do shootouts. They do live, with blanks, obviously. At noon, I think. I think it's every day. But it's very, very regularly, if nothing else. It's kind of campy. It's a fun thing to bring the kids to, I guess. But yeah, other than that... All that's really left is the site of the massacre, which still exists today. You can look it up and get the GPS coordinates. This is a illustration, obviously, but it's by the Gila River, west of Phoenix. And you can, this is the actual trail. I mean, if you can call it that, just give an idea of how crazy the terrain was for them to go, west. This was the trail up the mesa, and when they got to the top of the mesa, this was, this was the incline basically to get to the top where they encountered the Yavapais, who then murdered them. This is a, not much of a memorial here, but this is a, there's a sign that's sitting in a pile of rocks. At the top of that incline, it says, Site of the Oatman Massacre, February 18th, 1851. And they also have a gravestone. There's question marks about whether the bodies of the family are actually there or if they moved the bodies. No one really actually knows. But there is a gravestone there that says, In memory of the Oatman family, six members of this pioneer family massacred by Indians in March of 1851. Erected by the Arizona Society of the Daughters of the American Revolution, 1954. They got the month wrong for some reason. It was in February, and I don't know why they have March on this plaque. The sign has it right, February. But here's the thing is, as they rewrite history, plaques like this are going to disappear. Plaques like this that plainly explain, in memory of Oatman family, six members of this pioneer family massacred by Indians in March of 1851, despite the date being wrong. Massacred by Indians is not exactly something that that I think will be socially acceptable. Well, it probably isn't today. I don't know. They put the plaque up in 1954 when you could still say such things. Yeah, it's, again, not much of a memorial. You got some fence posts in the ground in this little sandy area around a mass grave, possibly, or again, no one actually knows if their bodies are really there. This is a sign they put up in the 1920s that's no longer there. On this spot, March 1852, Royce Oatman, wife, two boys, two girls, were killed by Tonto Apaches. Again, the names have changed, and they call them Yavapais now. Lorenzo D. Oatman, that was the brother, was left for dead. Olive and Mary Ann were taken captives. These girls were sold to the Mojaves in 1852. Mary Ann died. Lorenzo left for dead, recovered. And in 1856, with the aid of the U.S. forces, Olive was returned to her brother. Erected by Arizona Highway Department, 1926. And then, of course, the names of the relevant white people in the government that erected that sign that, as far as I know, is no longer there. And now, unfortunately, she is used in pop culture, despite having nothing to do with feminism at all, as kind of this feminist icon. I mean, they've used in these neo-westerns that they're producing, right? These lefty fucking westerns that, like, magatards, like, still like to jizz their pants because, well, they're wearing cowboy boots. It must be base because they're wearing cowboy boots. I'm going to get me some cowboy boots. Oh, they're riding a horse. That has to be base because them lefties, they don't like to ride them. They don't ride on a horse or nothing. Cowboy boot. You guys know the types. These people that like all this stupid shit like Yellowstone and all this other garbage. They've based fictional characters on her, and it's always like some fucking hot-tempered feminist with like the base tattooed face, when that was not her at all. When she returned to society, she had a really hard time. In fact, she married that rancher from Texas and adopted a couple kids, but all the information about her from that time is that she actually went in and out of not mental institutions, but not resorts, but like basically, because the rancher was wealthy enough to send her to like places, right? Like, I guess you could say it was kind of like a day spa for stressed out people or whatever. And she was depressive. She did a lot of philanthropy work towards the end of her life and helped kids and things like that. But everyone that knew her said that she was just really kind of fucked up from that situation, and that she often talked about, how she missed her family. And how she always thought it was this, which it was, obviously, this horrific thing to have been robbed of her family and go through that ordeal at such a young age. And not only just watch her mother and her pregnant mother and her father and many of her siblings clubbed to death, but to watch her in slow motion, watch her little sister waste away and die, while forced to live in a Mojave village after being brutally beaten and raped by Yavapais for a while. And because of her face tattoo, she couldn't really hide everyone who she was. Because again, she was the only, at that point, because her sister was dead, the only white woman in North America with a tattoo. And it's on her fucking face. So she couldn't go out in public without everyone knowing who the fuck she was. So she started wearing a veil to try to hide it, but Can't hide like a big fucking tattoo on your face. But I guess it's the same thing, right? It's the same thing. White settlers going west. It's the same thing as the mass immigration to our countries today, right? It's the same exact thing. Same situation entirely. You know, I mentioned the other day on Twitter, and enraged a lot of Pajits and Jews. I said something along the lines of, if you ever hear a Jew or an immigrant use the phrase, our founding fathers, tell them to shut the fuck up. Because this is the kind of shit my ancestors were going through to make this country happen. We didn't show up to an already established nation as fucking parasites. You are not like us. Those are not your ancestors. Shut the fuck up. These are my people. And I will never, ever feel fucking even a little bit bad about what happened to the Native Americans. And yes, I know not every tribe was like this. And I'm sure atrocities happened the other way around. But frankly, I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. My ancestors paid with blood, sweat, and fucking tears. Not with H-1B1 visas. So shut the fuck up. Our founding fathers, shut the fuck up. And like I said, this is just one of many, many, many stories. When I was looking, because I wanted to say, like, was this an aberration in this time period? I know it wasn't an aberration, but maybe, well, like, by 1850s, is when you'd think that, you know, no, not at all. Not at all. There were Indians massacring whites on a fairly regular basis all the way up into the early 1900s. In fact, I found one story, I think it was like 1920s in Colorado, where it was a bunch of Indians got drunk and just started killing white people. You know, as they do, I guess. So anyway, that's the story of Olive Oatman. So if you're ever wondering what Oatman, Arizona is named after, that's the story. You ever see like some Hollywood, you know, feminist cunt with a tattoo on her face in a Western, this is what they're smearing. This is the history they're trying to appropriate, I guess. But this was the horror show that was the Old West for a lot of people. You know, again, her story is particularly bad because of just the, you know, it's obviously a bad story. Even if parts of it are exaggerated or there's some artistic license to it, I mean, look, her family was still massacred. She was still sold into slavery and raped repeatedly. And you know what I mean? Like, there, no amount of exaggeration will take away the basic facts. This was horrific and common, or at least, you know, not specifically this exact situation, but situations like this. Now, I read that article from that same time period where you had a wagon train attacked and 150 fucking people were killed for their supplies. You had the Oregon Trail going on. You had a lot of the 49ers. They're called the 49ers because 1849, you had the gold rush. So you had a lot of people going to California by land. And a lot of people didn't make it. You had the Mormons, of course, going into Utah, but it wasn't just Mormons. You had, the Oklahoma Territory with the homesteads. The movie Far and Away is based on that. You know, they had those land rushes. And we built this country out of fucking nothing. We built this country out of fucking nothing while Indians were trying to murder us. There's towns. There's entire, especially like in Arizona and through New Mexico, the whole Southwest. There are entire towns that were settled and then everyone got wiped out. Were driven out by hostile Indians, and then they'd have to go back and take it back. And you know, now Wickenburg is as an example, has a history like that, which is pretty close to where the Oatmans were massacred. People don't know this history because they don't teach it to you like this. They don't tell you these stories, and a lot of these stories are being lost. I mean, they're written down somewhere, but no one's, I mean, they're not going to keep republishing these books. I mean, fuck, if Netflix made a movie about this now, all of Oatman would be black and the Indians would be white. And people would believe it. It wouldn't make any sense, but people would believe it. So anyway, hope this was at least a new story for a lot of people. And for any Jew that wants to say, oh, that doesn't sound real, I got two words for you, bitch. Anne Frank, fuck off. Whatever this story is a bajillion times more real than that fucking piece of fiction. So let's take a look at Hyper Chats on Odyssey. All right. Bessemer72 says, hi, Devin. I found a gem of a movie that you might enjoy deconstructing. Runaway Jury. Everyone is manipulating, scamming, except the highly ethnic Jewish lawyer, played by Dustin Hoffman. The subject is holding a gun makers accountable for shooting deaths. Give up guns, Whitey, for the kids. I feel like I've... have I seen that? Let me look. Maybe I haven't seen it, but I saw previews of it. Because I was thinking of a movie that was more 80s, and that says 2003. So... Oh, it could be good. I'll add that in there. Based on a true story, I'm sure, as they always are. All right, then we got Gorilla Hands.
You gotta pull yourself out! Holy fuck!
I'm thinking, Max!
Gorilla Hands. Hey, Damon, what do you think of the of Uncle? It just says, I think I remember Uncle someone. What do you think of Uncle? I always enjoyed his movies growing up and thought he seemed like a decent guy. Then there was that fateful night in Malibu 20 years ago. I was very blue-pilled and conservative normie back then, but I even knew his Hollywood days were over. Uncle? Uncle who? Oh, you're probably talking about, what's his face? The Lethal Weapon guy. Why am I? It's because you said uncle, and I started like scrubbing my brain around for that. What? Now I can't think of. Hold on. God damn it. He just did that interview on Rogan. Yeah. So, Mel Gibson, of course. Sorry, I'm like, my brain's still in 1850 here. I don't know. He's a hardcore Catholic, to a cutard degree. I haven't seen the Rogan interview. I've seen clips though, where it's like, okay, come on, dude. Whatever. I think he's a net positive. I do. I think he's a net positive. He's probably kind of a little crazy. Let's just be honest. He's probably a little bit crazy. His movies are good. He's a good director. Gorilla Hand says, I listened to his interview with Joe Rogan last night, and the most of his opinions on the word I agree with. I personally think they framed him after he directed The Passion of the Christ. It's good to see him bounce back after so many tumbles and setbacks in his life. His father is a genius. I don't know much about his father. I heard that he's like also hardcore Catholic or something. But I haven't seen the interview. I saw some clips that make... I don't want to get into it, but like, come on. The Shroud of Turin guys, really? I've always thought that was fake. Even when I was like super religious, I always thought it was kind of silly. But, you know, whatever. Gorilla Hand says, I met Uncle... Oh, there we go. Uncle Mel Gibson. There we go. Christ Pilled says, Devin, your talent as an author is too precious to waste any longer. We would happily go without some Wednesday streams to gift you some time to finish another audiobook, whether it's about modern media's effects on our brains or Day of the Rope 2. If you, dear listener, want more pro-white art in the world, please vote with your money and give Devin a $5 a month. Someone else is saying this on Subscribestar, so he has some passive income outside of streams to deliver us Day of the Rope 2. Well, there you go. There's a suggestion from Christ Pilled to support the cause. Yeah, I mean, look, it'll get done. Both those books. I mentioned real briefly that I have like a nonfiction book that I'm working on, and it is outlined. It's not going to be super long, but it needs to be a book. It's way too long to be like a stream or anything like that. And it's the kind of thing that I feel like it needs to be like a book that you can go back to and reference and stuff. And then as far as Day of the Rope 2, that, you know, I'm going to try to have that done or out the door this year. But I know it's only January, so that's not saying much. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with all that. I know. I think I said that last year too, and it didn't happen. So I know. I get it. It is tough though. It's tough to work a full-time job, which this stream really is. A lot of people don't realize that. They think, oh, you only work two nights a week. It's like, not really, you know, kind of had to read a book for this one, and kind of, you know, there's a lot of preparation that goes into this sort of thing, you know, looking through newspapers, and it might make it look easy, but it's not easy. But thank you for the support there, Christ Pilled. Jesse Poe Holiday says, ever thought of doing a deep dive on George Patton? He seemed like one of the last true hardcore Western men. He discovered the truth at the end of the war, who the real enemy was, and he was also Jew-pilled. He despised that coward war criminal Eisenhower. What do you think? I was thinking if I did that, I might do it through the context of the movie, the very Jewish movie that was very promoted, because they knew you couldn't, he was such a well-liked figure that you couldn't act like he didn't exist, but you also couldn't let people know what he was really like. And so they did a rebranding of Patton by making him look kind of like the hard ass that people liked about him, but of course leaving out all the little bits and pieces that you've mentioned. So maybe that would be a good... That's something I know I started one at one point. I started watching it and started doing, then I got distracted by something else. Hungry Howie!
I'm just a weekend photographer.
In regards to those asking for your older style content from the YouTube days, what about using Kickstarters to fund those projects? Could be an alternative way to create some of those high emotional value videos, like an updated version of Defiant or some other topic that would be good for red pilling. The problem with that is there's not a lot of sites that won't insta-ban you for that kind of a thing. And it still doesn't take away from the fact that it takes time to make those. You know what I mean? Like, I still got to be streaming. And, you know, a lot of those videos take weeks to make. And, you know, I'm not going to ever make videos like that again. It's just, it makes it tough to also be doing the streams and, you know, I'm going to spend weeks on this thing. I've done it. Like, I think I was streaming when I made Defiant, right? It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. Because I don't farm anything out to anyone else. Maybe I should, but I don't farm anything out to anyone else. Like, if you get a book of mine or a video of mine or anything of mine, it's 100% me. You know, like, with the exception of obviously sometimes I get footage from other sources or whatever, but, like, you know, by and large, it's like 100% me, you know? So, whereas a lot of other people have producers and, you know, things like that. And, you know, if I were to take on sponsors and stuff like a lot of people do, and I'm not saying, I'm even 100% against that, but I prefer not to operate that way. But then it affords you the ability to do stuff like that. But, you know, it's a lot of time. But again, maybe we'll have some come out this year. I like how you guys are just taking. You just want more and more and more. I'm only joking. It's a good problem to have. Lampshade Denier says it's hysterical that Panda Express is trending on Twitter because of that douchebag Chris Rufo. They go from learn to code to learn to build a rice bowl. Fucking conservatives conserve nothing. I wasn't really on Twitter much because obviously I was, you know, knee deep in Olive Oatman. I want to keep calling her Annie Oatman. It was so hard to not do that because of that Western chick Annie. Now I can't even think of what her last name is. But like, there's that other famous Western girl named Annie something. But I kept wanting to call her Annie Oatman like the whole stream. But I was up to my eyebrows in Olive Oatman all day, looking into this stuff. But I can infer based on what you're saying, kind of what happened. And H-1B1 visas you're going to get them. You're going to get them. It's going to happen. You know, here's one thing I want to talk about actually. That I meant to talk about during the stream a little bit. One thing that you'll notice with the difference between the Native American reaction to white immigrants, if you want to call us that, into their quote-unquote nations, and versus the white reaction to the non-white immigrants into their nations, okay? One of the big differences is there, it seems to be, and they seem to be tied, it seems to be that the less civilized you are, the more violent your reaction. So in other words, because the Yavapais, as an example, had literally no civilization, and they encountered white people with no civilization, their response to that was hyper-violent. because it was in direct relationship to their lack of civilization. Whereas whites, because they're highly civilized, their response to the invaders is extremely, to their detriment, nonviolent. Okay? And at first I was like, well, that's because their tough environment has created this violent spirit that is actually, you know, it's actually preferable, and because they have these constant pressures applied to their survival, they're more sensitive to it and whatever. And that was at first I was like, that's probably, you know, that's an easy explanation that explains the whole relationship there, whereas like life gets easier, people are lazier and whatever. And maybe there's an aspect to that. But then I started thinking about it and I was like, well, actually, if you think about it, it's because as you become more civilized as a people, it's not that you become inherently that you would become less defensive about defending that civilization. It's that you expect that as a civilization, as a complex society, where all these different duties are supposed to be divvied out to different members of the society, like everyone's pulling their weight just in a more precise, segmented way, right? That everyone's got their little job that they're doing to make the society go round. I think that as you become a more complex society, people start to get blinders on and just focus on their little job they're supposed to be doing to keep everything running. And they make this assumption that there are people that are at the top that are supposed to take care of the invasion thing. You know, as an example, you could say that, in a micro, if you have people in your neighborhood that look like they shouldn't be there, most people, their first response isn't to go out there with a baseball bat. Maybe it should be, I don't know, but like, you know, whatever. But it's to call the cops, because you know that the cops, it's that job has been delegated to someone else, that they're supposed to keep the riffraff out of your neighborhood. And that works in a society that's not multicultural. Because in a society that's not multicultural, where everyone's interests align, where you don't have all these different interest groups, you know, competing for power, some interest groups who actually want invaders to come in, and some interest groups that represent the invaders themselves. If you had an actual monolithic society that was that made up of people with a shared history and a shared destiny and shared priorities, that would be the way that you would want people to behave. You wouldn't want people, everyone acting as vigilantes. You wouldn't want that, because you would want the people that you have delegated that task to, hopefully through some system that is going to select the best people for that job, that's who you'd want handling that job. And unfortunately, we find ourselves in a situation where the people who are supposed to be handling that job are no longer doing that job. And because we've relied on that system for so long, the other people kind of seem helpless. They don't know, well, what are we supposed to do when this doesn't work? And that's, I think, that's unfortunately the situation that we're in right now. Let's see here. Lampshade Denier again says, Chris Rufo is married to an illegal alien from Thailand. No surprise that he is good with white replacement. So there you go. Perfect example of why this isn't working. We also have the race traitor Goy Matt Walsh jump on the bandwagon with bashing white Zoomers and their unwillingness to work at Panda Express. Again, same exact situation. This is what happens when you have multiculturalism and you can't rely on the people because they're not your people anymore. And so their priorities no longer are your priorities. And so you might as well not have them there. I mean, they serve no purpose. In fact, to a degree, they are the problem. They are the problem. Not even to a degree. At this point, they are the problem. They are the enemy. The people that are supposed to be protecting you from the enemy have become the enemy. So you just don't have a country right now. You are in an occupied territory. You're basically you're the Indians right now. You've been occupied by the settlers. I guess that's one way you can make a comparison. Goyboy 1488 says, just here to respectfully request a Devon and Morgoth fireside chat. I'd be down with that. I'm sure he would be too. I just, you know, a matter of lining that up. Beach Goys. Beach Goys, just want to say I'm happy that Ear Rape has made its way back in the Insomnia Stream. Big fan. You haven't had... That was probably a good example of it. Haven't had a chance to fix some of the levels. And last stream, I was kind of being... I don't know. I was embracing Violent Bigfoot last stream for some reason. Or I'm sorry, Swamp Ape! It was Swamp Ape! All right. Volga German says, your walk around video inside the house a few episodes back is very impressive. Niggas have no taste if they don't notice. Great work. I think I know what you're talking about. Thank you very much. Decimal Threat. I enjoy the clips people have posted to X. The ones you have reposted are the true meat of the fantastic streams you produce. Keep up the great work. I hope your listeners continue to spread the impactful and concise statements that continue to inform and inspire. Yeah, I encourage people to clip and share whatever they find value in. You know, you be the judge of what you think resonates the best with you and what's going to help us the best. And if I see it, I don't always see it. If I see it, I'll retweet it to the people. I mean, I'm pretty sure that I'm algorithmically, I don't want to say my account's being suppressed. I hate it when people say that, but I bet I can look at numbers and I can pick up on patterns and I can know that, well, that's weird. I tweeted out about like the perfect example is I said, what the fuck is a power lesbian? And retweeted a headline that had the word power or words power lesbian in it. I ended up getting like 100,000 likes or something, like something stupid. And I was like, okay, so if I just don't talk about Jews, is this like X trying to tell me, hey, Devin, just, you know, just say funny things and look, we'll reward you. But I've had a few anomalies like that where I'm just like, oh, okay. So if I just go non-political at all, then you guys give me a lot of people seeing my stuff. Interesting. So I'll do what I can when I see it. J-Ray 1981 says, where the fuck is retarded faggot? Oh, I don't know. That's a question for the ages. Question for the ages. Corn Pop the Bad Dude. Believe I heard you talk about circumcision last stream. Did you know that Christians didn't even need to circumcise? It was a covenant the Jews had with God. Do you know why Christians did? To be more Jewy. Can you imagine still to this day butchering your child to be more like Jews? Yeah, there was a big campaign in America to circumcise your kids, and it started, I would say, well, it didn't start post-World War II, but I feel like it really picked up post-World War II. I have a theory about that. I don't know if it's right or not, but I think, didn't Kellogg, like the guy who started Kellogg's, didn't he really push hard for circumcision or something? He said that it would cure masturbation or something. I don't remember what it was. I suspect, though, that at least from what I've heard, and this is nothing that I've sat down to research. I just had this thought. Maybe it's totally wrong. From what I heard, one of the ways in which Jews were identified during World War II is circumcision, because no one else did it. So it was like, and all Jews did it. So it was a quick, easy way to be like, yep, he's a Jew, you know, like, his, you know, pull down your pants, he's a Jew. And I suspect, although I could be totally wrong, that this might have influenced Jews to want to make this a less useful way of identifying Jews by getting a lot of non-Jews to do it. In the, you know, because they're very, very paranoid about that era in history. So I don't know if that's true. It's just something I've thought of. J. Ray 1981 says, look up the book, The Frontiersman. Good old Mel Gibson brought that up. Did he? The Frontiersman, huh? Is that the one? I think I might actually know what that is. Let me see. The Frontiersman. I don't know what this is, actually. Well, there's a movie. I don't think it's the movie, right? It's the books. There's a 1938 movie called The Frontiersman. And it doesn't say it's based on a book. There's got to be a book. There's this book series. There's another book by Alan W. Eckerd at Barnes & Noble. What year was it out? It says, the first book in a six-volume series known as The Winning of America in Hardcover and Narratives of America in Paperback, one of the Eckerd. Or what year was it made? Blah, 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 blah. It's about the period between 1755 and 1836, but when was it written? Published in 2011. Oh, it might be. That's not what I was thinking of then. Might be worth taking a look at. Yeah, I think that this is something I want to periodically do, is I want to tell some of these stories about how the West was won, because it's a lot of shit that people who are descended of these people should be proud of that you've never heard of. Like I was saying, Jebediah Smith, I mean, that guy was just a fucking complete, like, monster. Like, he, I mean, not in a bad way. Like, he was like a fucking, like, Chad, like Giga Chad, like you wouldn't believe. And just stories about these guys who are, I mean, and he was descended from, on both sides, some of the original settlers from, I mean, his family had been here since the 1600s. And, you know, as my ancestors too, and a lot of you guys out there too. And it's just, it's a history that they gloss over because it became unpopular to, talk about, especially with the reframing of things from the manifest destiny narrative to, you know, the unlimited white guilt, narrative that we live in now. So I think it's a good idea to revisit some of these stories. Let's take a look here. Blute and Biden.
Hey, Cord.
Will the shitlibs cause or allow any trouble at Trump's second inauguration? I mean, probably a little bit, but not like, you know. I would be surprised. Maybe there's going to be a couple blown out of proportion Antifa things, right? Like Molotov cocktails, like a I'm guessing like a fraction of what we've seen in the past. Just, you know, you're going to have. Just like, the right has Q-tards, the left has blue-tards, and I'm sure some of them will pop off. That's just it's the nature of the beast, or you know, some low IQ non-white will freak out or something. But nothing, it's not going to be a big deal, I don't think. Corn Pop the Bad Dude, you talked about royal jelly, but left out the best part. Tell us, Devin, how is royal bee jelly made exactly? I don't know how it's made. I think it's just, I mean, it's excreted from bees, right? Like, I mean, it's bee barf, like essentially, but like, so is honey, kind of. I don't know. Let me look. Is there something more to it that I'm missing out here? Let me look. It is, yeah, it's produced by worker bees. Royal jelly is secreted by the glands in the heads of the nurse bees, primarily the hypopharo-something gland and the mandibular gland of bees aged 5 to 15 days. The bees consume large quantities of honey and bee bread, which is like, it's like pollen. Like, it's like the dry food they pack in there to stimulate their glands to produce royal jelly. Royal jelly is a protein-rich secretion with a milky appearance. It contains protein. It's literally cum, guys. It's fucking cum, okay? I mean, it's secreted by female bees, but it's... it looks like cum. it's got the consistency. I don't know. Eat it if you want to. It's not something I'm interested in. Man of Low Moral Fiber says Mormons would be a lot cooler if they still excluded darkies. Well, yeah, I mean, you can say that of every religion at this point. But yeah, that was a core part of the Mormon religion at one point. In fact, it kind of worked out in terms of settling the West, because if you believe the Mormon narrative, these Indians, these Yavapais that they're encountering, they're literally brown because God cursed them. And they are, you know, they're not as good as you. In the context of 1850, it's not as big of a deal to, if you're a Mormon, to kill an Indian as it is to kill a white man. You know, there was a very racial component to Mormonism in the early days, and going on through up into the 20th century. It really wasn't until the 70s that boomers ruined Mormonism in that way. Corn Pop the Bad Dude said, would you rather die without offspring or splooge your goop into a high IQ Ethiopian girl? I mean, I don't know. Ethiopian? I know they're high IQ for Africans, but I wouldn't want a half Ethiopian kid. There's other reasons. IQ is not everything, by the way. There was a time I used to think that it was. There was a time where I was kind of like in the Stephen Molyneux days of my understanding of racial differences. There was a time where I thought that was like the defining thing that you needed to worry about when it came to having mixed race kids. That, like, you know, it actually wasn't like that. That was the thing. That was the only, that was, because I was coming from a place where, due to all the programming, I was like, well, if you don't want mixed race kids, it's probably, you know, it's some kind of bigotry. There's no rational reason to not want to do that. And then Stephen Molyneux was like, well, he popularized it. He didn't invent it, but he popularized it with a lot of people at the time on YouTube that, hey, look, actually, here's the race and IQ numbers. And then all of a sudden you had a scientific reason to not want to do that. But it's very limited in its... in its scope. Like, it's obviously race and IQ is an issue, but that's not where the differences end. It's just one of the easiest differences to measure. And so it might not even be the most important difference. It's a important difference. It's certainly not an insignificant difference, but it's certainly not I wouldn't do it. Because there was a time where I was like, oh, then I guess Asian chicks are still cool. But no, I don't think that's necessarily the way to go. Let's see here. Zaz, at the same time, look, if it's like, if for some reason, right, it's like, let's say that was the choice. You either have zero offspring or you have to have a half Ethiopian kid, and you chose have an Ethiopian, which, by the way, I don't know how that would ever be the choice, but if somehow that was gun to the head or something like that, you know, you do whatever. Okay. I get it. You know, I get it. But at the same time, that's never the choice. Zazzy McTazbot, last stream, Love and Division recommended two movies. I can't speak to the last whites of the East End London, but The Empire of Dust is cinematic gold. It's an insight into the mind of the Negro, a real eye-opener, and might do well to make up a normie or wake up a normie or two. Thanks for the show. I haven't watched it yet, but that is on the list. And I had a couple other people reach out to me and mention that it was worth checking out. So with your recommendation also, I guess I'll have to at least watch it within the next little bit here. Zazzy McTazbot said, I did know the story of the Oatman family. I always thought Olive was very beautiful. Her albina Molly and Evelyn McHale, all oddly very cute. Oh, her and then I don't know who these other people are. Are these other like victims of Indian atrocities? Who are these? No, she's a communist. And then who's Evelyn McHale? Well, you have a type. They all look very similar. Well, I don't know. Evelyn, not so much. You think Evelyn's cute? That commie chick's all right, but she is a, who was she? A bookkeeper that plunged to her death from the Empire State. All right, well, whatever. It's too late for me to look at that right now. Love and Division!
Cash flow checkout.
I'd like to return this duck.
Love and Division says, in TV shows and movies, brown people are needed to civilize whites. Who produces these shows and movies? Thanks, Devin, for the history lesson. Yeah, absolutely. It is opposite world. It is satanic inversion. I know there's people that don't like that term, but it's an accurate one, I think, in this scenario. Lumpy Koala Bear. Mike. Like, no one gets that but me, I think. Anyway, Thomas Jefferson's notes on the state of Virginia really highlight the savagery of the natives, and also goes into the genetic differences between whites and slaves. If you want an interesting read, look into the race science of the founding. Jefferson was an amazing American. Thomas Jefferson, notes on the state of Virginia. Really? That is very interesting. I will check that out. That's the other thing I'm getting tired of. I'm getting tired of people, especially in response to when I said that thing about the founding fathers. I had so many people, including Jews, who would say things. In fact, one Jew literally did say, actually, you're just a bigot. I'm more like the founding fathers because I'm not a racist. And it's just like this idea that the founding fathers weren't racist is the stupidest thing in the world. And so any chance you get to point that out is always good. Bread Baker for Adolf. Fuck these prairie Negroes. They are soulless even without firewater. In the truest meaning of the term. P.S. I read somewhere Hitler kept his mustache small to be able to make a seal with a gas mask in case that shit happened again. Well, I guess that's possible. I'd heard that he did it to differentiate himself from other people so that people could see him and be like, oh, that's that Hitler guy. So it was like a marketing thing. J-Ray 1981, this will break boomers who all their fucking lives would tell us kids we have Indian in us. Yeah, well, was it by choice, that Indian that's in you? I guess that's a good question. Well, although you could flip that around, though. You go south of the border. There's those rapey Spaniards. The Screen Age. If anyone remembers Louis C.K., he had a big thing about how Indians just fuck off all day and how great that is. I actually liked Louis C.K. at one point, if you can believe it. I'm the opposite person I was 10 years ago. There's a lot of us ex-liberals out there. Yeah, I actually could appreciate his humor at one point. In fact, he made that show that he self-produced, Louis. And I remember I watched it, even though, like, now I think it would make my skin crawl. I think I watched, like, a few of those episodes and thought it was kind of funny. We're all kind of waking up and changing and the more we understand things, you know, and it shows you the seductive power that this degenerate shit has. And look, on some level, you have to admire the skill that goes into that to get people to laugh at their own destruction. Reinhardt says, replay gang commander on deck. Can't wait to hear your scoop on this story. Another casualty of the pathological wanderlust parcel to the European conquering spirit. Our women of European stock must be protected and guided at all costs. We have no future without them. Novanow.org. I have no idea what that is, but there you go. In the case of Olive Oatman, I mean, she was a kid. You know, Marianne Oatman, they were kids. They were just going with their parents. It's like, many of us whose dad got a job in a new town, and you don't have a choice. You just got to go. You don't want to go to the new school, but you got to do it anyway. This is a little more intense than that, obviously, but, you know, kind of crazy. Many such cases. A lot of pioneer children were subjected to the same or worse. Dr. Weeb just doing cursory searches on Oatman. The misrepresentation of her experience and the total sanitization from any respectable sources I can find is unsurprising, yet still disgusting and contemptible. Sick bastards claiming she didn't want to return to her civilization. That's the narrative that you'll find. There's no evidence of this, by the way. Zero evidence that she wanted, she liked being with the Mojave, and she felt like she was part of their tribe, and she didn't want to go. Zero evidence of that. She never said that. She never intimated that. And again, she never tried to go back. I mean, she could have tried to go back. She married a rancher guy, a white guy, and looked after orphans and adopted white kids. You know, like she didn't make it. She didn't even get like liberally about it and start like trying to do like Indian outreach or try to be some kind of like emissary to the Indians because, oh, I understand them more. You know what I mean? Like, you would think that if she had somehow had grown fond of her time with the Indians, at the very least, for fuck's sake, she wouldn't have written that book. Like, all those clips that I played, those are quotes from her. Unless I said, like, here's the author, which I did a couple times. But those were her quotes. So, and people can say, well, she just wanted to make money. Really? Then you're calling her like some kind of fucking sellout. I mean, it's so fucked up that's what they need to do to try to hide this story. Because it's such a bad story and such a well-documented story. I mean, we know that happened to her family. We know it happened because not only did she survive, her little brother survived. So we got two people who saw it happen survive in totally, you know, different ways. So we know that her family was massacred. And again, this is at a time when this wasn't an anomaly. This was happening all the fucking time. And there's lots and lots of record of it. So it's, It is disgusting. I found a few YouTube videos that I wanted to watch just to see, like, you know, how they presented it. And it was I wanted to fucking reach through the screen and just start choking. Like, one in particular is this fucking Scottish fuck that was like, there's another guy that kept mispronouncing Yavapai. He kept calling him Yavoopy or something like that. And I'm just like, you don't even fucking know how to say it. Like, get the fuck out of here. My lying eyes says Zimbabwe just gave white farmers reparations. No joke, because everyone is starving after they removed white farmers. Yeah, no, that's, yeah, weird how no one can get wrapped. No, it seems like brown people really struggle with the basics of you know, agriculture. Bessemer says, thanks for the stream, Devin. Great show. I did not know about this story. Well, I didn't know about it until I went to Oatman. Now, that's how I found out about it, is I went to Oatman. I was like, who the fuck's that? And look, the locals of Oatman, even though, like, they're not geographically tied to the story, right? Like, nothing in this story happened in Oatman. But they all know the story, and they all... Very right-leaning town, Oatman, by the way. Very right-leaning town, is all I'll say. System-approved rebel. Some Australian Abos tribe ate their own babies. Being on the verge of starvation was the norm. They even cannibalized European and Chinese gold miners, preferring Chinese flesh as it was less salty. Yeah, well, like I said, they're like animals. This is what wild animals will do. Wild animals, to survive, will start eating their young and shit. I'm not trying to be funny. I'm not trying to be cute. The Native Americans, like the Yavapai, were just barely evolutionarily above apes. Like, they just barely. And by the way, that's... Why do you think with all the resources that these communities are given for free, there's not at least, like, one Native American, like... tech CEO or something? There's not even one. You'd think they would, like, infinity, you know, free everything. There'd at least be one. Like, you could say, well, they're all so, you know, like, it's like, don't feed the animals because they'll get lazy. Okay, but there'd still be, like, one. Right? There'd be one. One that would be like, all right, I'm actually going to take advantage of all these opportunities that I get handed to me on a silver platter. I'm going to be the outlier that actually, you know, goes and uses this degree to invent. No, there's not one. There's not even one. There's not one. Higgs 49 with the big dono.
Money is power. Money is the only weapon that the Jew has to defend himself with.
Look how Jewy this fag is. Higgs 49 says, these types of untold stories are some of your best work. The white man's altruism has always been our biggest weakness. It's time we steel ourselves for the necessary work that is coming. Hail victory, brother. Well, I appreciate that. And thanks for the support. That's how these stories keep coming. So I appreciate that, Higgs 49. Andromeda says, that's an amazing story. Thank you, Devin. Well, I appreciate that. Friendly Neighborhood Fascist says, I'm upset that this story didn't end with the systematic slaughter of, well, you know. Well, I'll tell you what. Here is a response. Let's see here. There, I think I have this. There was a response from, yeah, here we go. This is from the Democratic State Journal. Upon reading the account of Olive Oatman, quote, we have just received the book of the captivity of the Oatman girls, for which the people have been looking anxiously for several weeks. It is a tale of horrors and well told. The reader will rise from its perusal with a feeling prompting him to seize the musket and go at once to chastise those inhuman wretches among whom Olive has spent 5 years. The American people ought to go and give them a whoopin'. Read the book, though it is one of horrors. Its style and truthfulness attracts to a thorough reading. That was from a book review from the Democratic State Journal. Man of low moral fiber says, I've always liked the term Indians to describe the Chugs because Indian is inherently derogatory. I'll never call them Native Americans. I think we should bring back Injuns. I think Injuns is kind of cooler. But yeah, Indians works too. And the funny thing is, it's still like the Bureau of Indian Affairs. It's kind of funny that that's still the official name of their federal government babysitters. Hammerhead Cow says, I heard a revisionist story the other day. A police chief, Shippy, his son and his driver, shot themselves and stabbed themselves to frame the poor innocent Jewish anarchist, Lazarus Offenbach, in 1908. It's a hilarious story of Jewish outrage. You might find it interesting. I have not heard of that, so I will put that on the list. CreativeBot72 says, I dedicate a pit to the Injuns. Yeah, I wish I still had my some of my Gallup animations loaded up. They would have come in handy, right? They would have come in handy. I guess we can do a...
Mega pit!
Hammerhead Cow, and Hammerhead Cow says, and I just want to say that I've lived in Injun... Oh, good. Good use of the Injun. Territory and from experience, I learned to fucking hate those assholes. Yeah, I'll tell you, a lot of Americans have not lived in close proximity to Indians, and it's a eye-opening experience, to say the very least. Again, there are different tribes. There are different tribes with varying levels of Indian-ness. We don't have the best ones in the Southwest. Man of low moral fiber says, you very briefly mentioned Anne Frank. How do Holocaust believers justify the fact that she died in an infirmary? Why would there be a medical facility for prisoners in a death camp? What possible labor could a Jewish girl provide to a war effort? Why wasn't she gassed? They tell insidious lies. Well, that's not even to mention the fact that much of her journal was written with a ballpoint pen that wasn't invented until later. So yeah, the whole thing's fabricated. Hammerhead Cow says, in local historical societies and county records, you can still find horrendous stories of Injuns doing things like torturing five-year-olds, double-crossing people who had been kind to them, etc. The term Indian giver or Indian giver does not come from misunderstanding of potlatch, but from Injuns' two-faced natures. Exactly. And look, that's a lot of these stories. That's what I'm saying. Some of these just have to be digitized. Like, some of them are just like, if you live in an area where there's old timers that, like, because not even the old timers remember it really, but they'll remember their grandpa telling them stuff. And you're right, like, the local historical society, sometimes those records just go in the trash. Like, this stuff needs to be preserved. Lowly Scribe in God's Army, thanks for sharing this story. The founders are the true greatest generation. Yeah, I mean, there's some arguments about, you know, no generation is perfect. And there's some arguments about, like, what their real intentions were and whatever. But, you know, it is what it is. I still think that we were a great, and we still are, a great people, Americans. And we should know more about our history. Gorilla Hands simply says,
faggots!
Speaking of faggots, you guys want to see... I never got to use this. Speaking of, like, douchebag Mojaves. Or was it? No, this is a Java Pi, I think. Let me see. Like, a lot of the photos, because the invention of the camera and all that stuff and just access to it. I was looking for pictures because I wanted to find, like, actual pictures of these monkey-ass Java Pis. Look at this fucking clown. Oh, man, look at this fucking...
Faggots!
dude, by the way. That's a Yavapai warrior. Proud Yavapai warrior. My lying eye says, Devin, are you familiar with AIU? Atheism is unstoppable. You and him both have a certain way of communicating. Very similar, uncanny, high IQ, and salty. I've heard the name, but I've literally never heard anything he's done. I've actually been told this by other people before, but I'm wholly unfamiliar with his work. Maybe I'll look into it someday. J-Ray 1981. Okay, so this is all of the faggot bots that work for the likes of Flood and his ilk. I have no idea what you're talking about. And then Nightish Review says, Devin, you're being hit with a bot storm of fake accounts. Please activate the age restriction so that new accounts under 2 weeks old can't comment to choke out the bots. Okay, I was not aware of this bot storm thing, but I'll look into it. Is there a way I can do this? Let me see here. Can I do this now? Do I have to do this now? Oh, bots, why do you have to attack a humble meme farmer doing his memes? Tending to his memes, as it were. I'll look into it after the show. We're almost done anyway. Pliskin says, I have to tip for the Lamanite truth streams. Yeah, exactly. The Lone Den. Fuck the Yavapai and their stupid skeleton cave. Those soldiers were doing it right. I don't know the reference, but but okay. Mark Twain Forever says, more history. I love history. Thank you. Well, I appreciate that. J-Ray 1981 says, holy Jeet takeover. I'm guessing it has something to do with the chat. Is the chat still going crazy? I guess it is. Do I have to do this now? Do I have to do this now? Are Jeet so retarded that they heard that I was talking about Indians and they thought that I was talking about them? Where do I even do this at? Let's see here. Settings. Content settings, perhaps. System. Account comments. No, that's not it. Okay, let's see here. Channels. Okay, I don't see it there. If I go to the page, is there like a channel settings thing? Settings. Here we are. Let's do There we go. Has that fixed it? Did that fix it? I think it fixed it. There we go. That worked pretty quick. Alright, I'll just block some of these guys anyway. Why not? I wonder what happened there. That's weird. Apparently Indians is a touchy subject. You can talk about... Who would have thought? You talk about fucking Oatman, and that's like You can talk about the Holocaust, and apparently you freak out a bunch of Jews by talking about it. That's weird. All right. That's interesting. Well, I guess now we know, right? Now we know that we're over the target. We need to start talking about the Indians and their treatment of whites. All right, well, that was good. All right, sorry about that, guys. I had no idea that was going on. So now we know that if we talk about Native Americans, there's a whole bunch of people that freak the fuck out. That's I would have thought that. That's actually really weird. Out of all the shit that we've talked about on this stream, this is what sets them off is all of Oatman. Interesting. Is it like that on... I gotta take a look on Rumble. Is Rumble doing the same fucking shit? Where's the tab I got for that? Here we are. No, Rumble's doing all right. At least I think so. Is there like a setting in Rumble I can do that's similar? Just in case? Yeah, Rumble's cozy. Okay, we're good on Rumble. All right, guys. Sorry about that. Yeah, I didn't know that. Apparently, that's the hornet's nest is Olive Oatman. Who would have thought? Man, that's crazy. Let's see here. Justin Quinn says, you've brought tears to my eyes hearing this story and realizing that fake anti-white garbage I was taught in school instead. Yeah, no, this is, it was, like I said, it was not an uncommon thing. You can look at old newspapers and look, I just look for Indian massacre. Who knows all the other different ways they phrased it? Like, I don't think that every time Indian violence happened, it was called Indian massacre. And yet, when I looked for Indian massacre, with a timeline, I think I searched, it was like 1820 to 1870, so like a 50-year period, which there was plenty of Indian massacre before and after, right? It was like endless, how much stuff popped up. Now, look, again, there were cases going the other way. And then there was also this one thing I thought was super interesting. There was, when they were first starting to get the Indian, like the federal government was starting to build like the... the Bureau of Indian Affairs type of stuff. There was an anonymous letter that was very well publicized, although it stayed anonymous and it was never, ever backed up by any kind of facts. That was supposedly from a federal worker who was afraid to give his name, that said that whites were secretly going around and massacring Indians in these remote areas. And the only reason why it wasn't being reported is because it was so remote. And so I was like, oh, maybe this is like a thing. And then you look into it, and they publish this fucking letter in every newspaper in America, or at least all the major ones, and then no follow-up. There's never like, oh, by the way, we found like the mass graves. No, never, you know. It was just, people were already planting the seeds. I think this was like 1870 or somewhere like around there. But they were already planting the seeds, like, oh yeah, secret white people going around murdering Indians. And not that that never happened. I'm sure it happened a little bit, but, you know. Let's see here. Where are we at now? A lowly scribe in God's army, thanks for sharing this story. The founders are the true... Greatest Generation. We already did that one. Gorilla Hands. We did that one. Mark Twain Forevermore. Did that one already. Here we go. Man of low moral fiber says there are a bunch of Negroes in general chat right now. Deport all Browns. Well, we got rid of them. Glock 23 says flat earth retards piss me off just as much as they do you, Devin. But there is another kind of retard on the internet spreading another big lie, and those are the nuclear weapon deniers. They are the atomic bombs dropped on Japan were, quote, fire bombs and not joke. Yeah. Yeah, the people that say atomic energy and bombs and it's the same people. It's the same exact retards. It's the same exact retards saying a lot of that stuff. Nukes are not fake. JRay1981 says JD or GDL. Not sure. I forget what you're talking about there. Spy Hunter simply says
faggots.
Bofides says almost forgot ammo money. Well, I appreciate that. Corn Pop, the bad dude, says excuse me, but do I see the Wayapa warrior or whatever the fuck appropriating white culture, i.e. clothing? I think you mean Yavapai. Fucking racist. Yeah, that's the thing, is this guy here on the screen, this tranny looking Yavapai Indian, that's not how they would have dressed before the white people showed up. In fact, I got even funnier ones than this guy. Or, I don't know. This guy's pretty fucking funny. Since apparently this is a soft spot, let's do a little more funny posting here of Indians. Let's do some more Indian shaming. Look at this. Look at that fucking top hat. Look at these fucking faggots. Oh, I got my top hat, but I forgot to wear pants. Yeah, you fucking engine faggot. What else we got here? let's see here. Actually, I might have some Mojave photos, like more current Mojaves. Okay, this one's funny just because this is their fucking women. Like, no wonder they were raping white women. You want to see this? This is a chick. The one on the left, I mean, it's a bad quality. That's why I didn't use it, because it's a really bad photo. But as long as we're mogging on fucking Indians. That's a chick. The one on the left, that's a chick. I know it's hard to believe. That's a chick. What else we got here? What else we got here? This, okay. Similarly. Wait for it. That's a chick. Oh, goodness me.
Oh, we are the proud Mojave people.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Fuck you, engine motherfuckers. So, anyway. Let's going back to the hyper chats here. Man of low moral fiber says differentiating the engine tribes is not necessary. They're all Navajos to me. Well, there is a difference, and there, look, there is a difference, and there is IQ differences, and in fact, some of them look suspiciously European, and probably be, and like I'm talking a lot of the tribes, like in the Northeast, right? And I think, well, not a lot of the tribes, but some of the tribes in the Northeast. And I suspect, and I doubt I'm the only one, that a lot of that, it could be, you know, like Viking, you know, people coming over here 1,000 years ago, or whatever the hell they came over here, because they did, and we know they did. You know, we've got the tombs of redheaded, you know, Europeans that predate many of these tribes in North America. Who's to say there wasn't some, you know, Europeans making it across the ocean and breeding with some of these people? I don't know if the genetic testing has been done to back that up in terms of the surviving tribes, but, you know, there's always been legends of redheaded Indian tribes and you know, fair-skinned Indian tribes and stuff like that. There's a difference. There's a difference. The ones on the a lot of them are like jungle Asians, like retarded jungle Asians on the, you know, in terms of the Yavapai. And but like there is a variety. There's a genetic variety for sure. When it comes to, there's no such thing as quote unquote Native Americans. It's just a bunch of different rando tribes that sort of inhabited this land, and they like to take credit for ancient civilizations they had nothing to do with. Like when they try to say that, well, we made the cliff dwellings. You didn't make the you didn't make the cliff dwellings. All right. You didn't. You just didn't. There's no possible way you did. Let's see here. Hammer of Thorazine. Hammer of Thorazine says 400 bands and counting just from me. All right, well, yeah, that's crazy. I didn't know that this would be the touchy subject. I mean, in fact, it's not even the first time I've addressed this subject. I've talked about, you know, I had that whole Gallup, New Mexico stream. Why were they mad about that? Is this like a Yavapai bot farm? What? Sometimes I say the craziest things. Yavapai, anything internet. Oh, well, what am I talking about? What are they going to bot farm me with smoke signals? Oh, all right. J-Ray 1981. Since day one of your stream, I've never seen this in chat. Yeah, I don't know what the deal was. Corn Pop the Bad Dude says, isn't the owner of Odyssey Indian? Well, I don't think he's this kind of Indian, right? Or maybe he is. I thought, I actually don't know who the new guy is. Spy Hunter.
That's what we do with Yavapai woman.
Spy Hunter says these bots are fucking
faggots.
Atheism is unstoppable. Makes some great videos. He red-pilled me on Emmett Till. He's a racist, philo-Semitic, liberal Gentile, but his content is varied. Right now, he's going big on UFOs. Well, I don't know. He kind of lost me at a lot of that stuff, including UFOs. I don't know. Maybe I'll check it out. J-Ray 1981 says, I could be wrong about GDL. I take it back. Ignore my $1 shitpost. I don't know what that means exactly. Bofity says, you missed my $10 question, Dev. Scroll back. Bofity's $10, huh? Let's see. Where are we at? You should have just said it again then. Why are you making me go back up? How long is this question that you couldn't just retype it? I don't see it. Wait, no, that's not it. So now you're making everybody wait. I guess in a manner of speaking, I'm making everyone wait, but it's not here. I don't have another one from you, dude. Yeah, I literally don't have it. I'm scrolling up and there's nothing. I got the one. Oh wait, yeah, I do. That's weird. It didn't pop up when I searched. Hey, Dev, if this bitch spoke English and the Indian spoke Indian, how the hell were they talking to each other? Well, according to the book, like especially when she met the Yavapai, it was very, you know, hard. And they barely spoke English. And, you know, she didn't speak any Yavapai. But she was with them long enough. Like you're living, I mean, you're 100% immersed in this. I almost said civilization or society. You know, you're in this nightmare of people speaking a prairie nog talk. You're going to pick up some of it. And they know a little bit of English because they are trading with the white men. I'm sure at first it was very difficult. But, you know, especially once you live there for years and no one else speaks. In fact, one of the things they said in the original newspaper article about her return back to Fort Yuma was that she was struggling with English, that she was very halting in her speech. And it took her, like, it took a few weeks for her to get, like, Englishy again. So, you know, it makes sense. Let's see here. Where are we at now? Now that we had to scroll back up for both of these. Man of Low Moral Fiber says, I'd like to think that if I lived in the 1800s, I would have dedicated my life to hunting Navajos. Well, I don't know. These weren't the Navajos. These were, I mean, not that Navajos didn't do some fucked up shit, but these were different tribes. In fact, they call them Apaches because Apaches were, I think, one of the more troublesome tribes. And I think genetically Yavapais are very close to Apaches. Like, I think they're like a spinoff group in a way. Corn Pop the Bad Dude said, they're dressed like those tranny punks in C-rated post-apocalyptic Hollywood movies. Well, yeah. Yes, they are. They're like Mad Max. Mad Max tranny Indians. Since you're talking about ancient civilizations, please look up Phoenician and Michigan tablets, also Michigan copper. I think it might be valuable to show how archaic these civilizations in North America are. And I'm talking like 5,300 BC in North America. Yeah, there's a lot of this stuff. There's a lot of ancient shit in North America that doesn't line up with this whole idea that these people came across the Bering Strait and are responsible for anything you find. It doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense. There's a lot of stuff that's dated well before these guys showed up. I mean, look, yeah, some of these guys showed up over the Bering Strait and whatever, right? But there's a lot of other, like, really ancient shit all throughout North America and probably in South America too, right? That doesn't necessarily mean that it's tied to the people who inhabited it, you know, 1,000 years later. And in the case of the cliff dwellings, no fucking way. No fucking way Yavapai Indians made the cliff dwellings. And look, some of them will even admit that in private. I'll just tell you that. My line eyes said, did you know you share a first name with another black-pilled streamer? Well, there we go. Atheism isn't stoppable. A lot of people really want me to check that out. All right, going to Rumble now. We'll go to Cozy Rumble that apparently was not inundated by bots. Here we go. Where's the Rumble tab at? Here we are. And thank God it wasn't, because that would have been annoying with the way I've got the hyper chat set up now. Who's Joe says, hey, I don't want to come off as racist at all, but I think Negro Spritzer makes a convincing argument. Many such cases. Many people seem to have think they like the cut of his jib. Rupert V21 says, Pajit here. I have found you through Adam Green. I have been following from ILD YouTube days. All Christmas songs are written by Jews. My two favorite streamers, Blackpill and Lucas Gage. Oh, we got Pajits in the audience, guys. Yo, you're taking the jobs of, even in terms of the audience, you're taking the jobs of the white people. Rupert V21 says, Wednesday and Saturday is a movie night. Hail Devin, love your stuff. Well, I appreciate that, Captain Pajit, who then again says, personally, I hate when Indians are sucking up to Jews. It's because the enemy is Islam. Well, okay, I think what you're getting at is a lot of Indians hate Muslims, so they think that they can suck up the Jews. Because there's like an ongoing rivalry between Hindus and Muslims. Who's Joe says, hey, Devin, I wanted to say that the insomnia stream is one of the best streams on the internet. Got a job opportunity at the ball crushing factory thanks to Hammer of Thorazine. I'm in the middle of 80-hour shift. Well, that's, look at that, an 80-hour shift at the ball crushing facility. All right, scrolling down here, we got Ree Cedar.
When you're trying to save money, a good rule to follow is to... Take it from me, Jim Neighbors. It'll pay dividends.
Professor Stack, I'm pumped to catch a live stream. Replay gang for years. Love your work. You ever think about doing a Colin Flaherty tribute stream? Keep crushing. I wouldn't mind doing that. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I interacted with him online at one point. But not. But it was really towards the end, and he was taken too soon. Not really substantively. Like, I don't think, like, we weren't like buddies or like that. But yeah. I think he followed one of my accounts at one point. He was a good guy. Who's Joe? Who's Joe says, hey, Devin, I wanted to give shout-outs to Replay Gang, Glock 23, and some super chatters who haven't messaged in a while, like Suicidal White Male, HGHGHGH, lots of HGs, and everyone else who loves the stream. Well, there you go. Shout-out to the people maybe gone but not forgotten. Who's Joe again says, Devil Dogs, please. I don't know what it's called on my... I literally don't know. The way I've got these loaded in, they're totally random. So I just hit a button, and there's no... They're not even labeled, like, in my list. I can't be like, oh, I want this one. So I just hit this button, and let's see if you get lucky.
The only thing
you got, horny Bigfoot.
It's a dying race, and they want to... reproduce more of their own kind.
Oh, horrible.
You got horny Bigfoot. All right, scroll down. Who's Joe again? I don't know, maybe you'll get it this time. That was a repeat of a previous one, so I don't know why that came up again. But yeah, no such luck. Who's Joe? Cypher says, hello, Devin. I finally received the book Merchants of Sin, recommended a few weeks ago on stream. We'll be reading this week. All right, well, let report back once you've read it. Devin, are you familiar with Francis Yoki's book Imperium? What are your thoughts on pan-European high culture, or is pan-European too broad? I think the question is too broad. You'd have to. I don't know the book you're talking about. The Francis Yoki's book Imperium. Let me look. What is this? A 1948 book by Francis Parker Yoki using the pen name Ulrich Werenge that argues for a pan-European fascist empire. Imperium presents an anti-Semitic theory of history, asserts that the Holocaust was a hoax, and is dedicated to the hero of the Second World War, meant to describe Adolf Hitler. Well, that sounds like fun reading. That could be a fun read. I haven't read it, though. Who's Joe says, hey, you know, who's Joe? Let's give it another shot, see if we get Devil Dogs. No Devil Dogs. Hey, Devin, I wanted to add that this still happens. I know a girl from Delaware who went on Tinder and got raped by a non-white. It would have never happened if anti-racism wasn't the current morality. Well, I don't think this was a result of anti-racism. I think that everyone knew from the moment those Yavapai showed up that shit was about to go down. And then it was all downhill from there. Cypher again says, Devin, I don't know if you remember my comment from the other week, but I wanted to say that the idea of delegating violence to the state was a bad idea. Delegating breeds complacency. Yeah, but I think that in a big society, you have to delegate. You can't just have... I'll tell you one thing you could do to make it easier. You could do sort of what other countries, including Israel, have done, or, well, they do it right now, where you make serving the military compulsory. That, I think, would be a... First of all, it'd be a boon for fitness. Like, you make it to where you have to serve. Like, even if you're too fat or whatever, I mean, maybe, you know, maybe you've got, like, bad knees or, like, but, like legit bad something. Like, maybe you have something wrong with you, okay. But if it's, like, you're too fat or something like that, no, that means you have to stay in basic training until you can pass the, you know, whatever. and then you're not too fat anymore. And then you do the, you know, do your 2 years or, you know, once you can pass the course, but they keep you in like a fat farm. They keep you in there until you can fucking pass it. And then you serve 2 years. And that'd be, if that's all you did in America, that'd be huge. Now, I don't know if that's a good idea with the current people in charge of America, because that would give them access to a lot of fucking soldiers that maybe they shouldn't have access to. But you get what I'm saying. In a non-hostile ruling class situation, I think that'd be a good idea. And the cipher says, baseball bat isn't a bad reaction to tee off what you said. Yeah, I get what you're saying. But again, if you had a society that actually functioned, you shouldn't have to do that. To the extent that people have had to do that in America, it's because, look, and that is why I have a somewhat of a fondness for the Old West, because it did require more of the citizens. You did have to, I mean, the sheriff had to make posses and go hunt down outlaws and shit like that. You know, that was, a lot of Americans romanticized that period because part of them wants to do that. And so you're right. It's not, you know. I think given the current situation, that's why we romanticize it, though. I think in a just world, it would be delegated properly. Who's Joe says, you know what? I'll give you another one. Let's see. Let's just see. Nope. Hit it. Money advice. Anyone with a police or military background can get $40 to $50 an hour as an armed security guard. I'm getting a physical for my ACT, or for my ACT 235 in the morning. Or ACT 235? I don't know what that is. I don't know if that makes me dumb or not. Should I know what that is? But yeah, there's lots of easy jobs like that. Not that it's super, well, I guess it depends on where you're posted, right? There's lots of opportunities for people that don't, I'll tell you, this is the way to put it. For those who are not picky about when they sleep, there's lots of opportunities. Jafig. Oh, and then Jafig gets the devil dog. Hard luck there. Jafig got, at least we got it right. We had a lot of engines in my high school in California. They were the source of most of the problems. They cannot be civilized. Look, I've had similar experiences, is what I'll say, in various Western states. Jafig again.
Hello. 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 Hello.
A lot of the white kids there would try to assimilate with them by claiming to have ancestry from whatever goofy tribe. That's the first I noticed the self-hatred and the desperation to appear white. Or to appear non-white, I think is what you mean. I saw that all the time. I saw white kids trying to be like, you know, a 16th this or an 8th that, because it was so beat into our heads that like white was bad, that if you could Sargon your way out of being white and say that your dad was black or something, like everything, you know, then it would be, you'd be free of that guilt. It was really kind of depressing. Jafi again says, I had to share my MVP with one guy just because he was mono Indian. Dude missed half the season. Could rant about res rats forever. Thanks for this installment, Devin. This one was galvanizing. Yeah, well, there you go. I went to a high school and a middle school with with a non-insignificant number of Indians. Who's Joe again says, hey, Devin, wanted to shill and ask if you would ever do an interview with Jolly Heretic with Edward Dutton. He's pretty popular. I'm sure it could add to the fan base with exposure, and Ed is amazing. Well, if Ed invites me on, I would probably do that. I don't know what we'd talk about. I mean, I know who he is. I'm familiar with his stuff, obviously. I wonder if there'd be a topic that he would... he'd want to talk about on his thing. But yeah, I'm not opposed to that. Scrolling down. Here we go. Oh, whoop. And of course, Negro Spritzer has expressed his he has added a group that he is dissatisfied with. In addition to not enjoying the company of dot Indians, Jews, blacks, Mexicans, and Asians of all sorts, he now appears to disapprove of the noble savage, the Native American. I wonder what he feels about how he feels about Eskimos. Cypher says, Devin, there absolutely was a pre-Mestizo civilization which had died out much prior to the prairie dwellers we have later encountered. Yeah, absolutely. There's no question about it. Cypher again. Well, you wanted to return the duck, but instead you got murderous swamp ape. Murderous swamp ape. Who's Joe says, hey, Devin, just because nobody mentioned this stream, I got to step up and say, do a stream on the Bronx Tale. I guess that's become like a thing. The longer I don't do it, though, the better it'll feel if I ever do it. Corn Pop the Bad Dude says, holy shit, you're advocating for mandatory military service. As a former Yugoslavian, you, sir, just gave me a chubby. No homo. Well, I just think it would, in the right societal conditions, that would be an appropriate thing to do. Like right now, like it would just be mandatory Israeli service in a way. You know, you'd just be dying for Israel mandatorily. But is that a word, mandatorily? But yeah, so right now it would be horrible, but... in the right society, it would be good. Cypher says, compulsory military or maybe a volunteer military, which guarantees citizenship, not to meme Starship Troopers, but it seems like a good in-group civil selection mechanism. Yeah, I wouldn't want to guarantee citizenship to just anyone that wants to come and serve our military. I kind of feel like that's part of how Rome fell apart. All right. We'll do one last check over on Odyssey to make sure I didn't miss any new ones here. Let's see here. We got my lying eyes continuing to make comparisons with me and atheism is unstoppable, apparently. Urban Quail Farmer saying... Atheism Unstoppable lost me when he cried and said anyone who doesn't support Israel is a terrorist. Well, that's a red flag. And then my line eyes again says, FYI, atheism. Why is this becoming Atheism Unstoppable hour? Dad's house burned down. Eat shit, Negro, cuck, Jew, lover. Well, there's someone who doesn't like him. And then my line eyes also expressing that he enjoys the happenings in Los Angeles and hopes that the fire finds fuel. Lon Awfully. It'll never not be funny to me. Lon Awfully says, just yesterday I couldn't find eggs in Ohio. Heads up. Eggs got really, you know what's weird? I think I told this already. This was a few weeks ago. I went to the store and eggs were like, they were like crazy expensive. It was like $7 for like a dozen. And I kind of felt crazy. I felt like, weren't these like $1.99 like not that long ago? And I brought it up to the cashier. I was like, hey, weren't these like way cheaper? Just a little bit. She's like, yeah, like 2 weeks ago she said 3 days ago, they were like $6. And then before that, they're like $5, like, you know, a few days before that. And then she said that her friend or I forget now, but like either a friend or a sister worked at a Walmart in a big city. And said that people are shoplifting individual eggs. That's become one of the most shoplifted items. So I don't know what's going on with fucking eggs, but, you know. Yeah, they ain't cheap anymore, apparently. Grizel Greybeard.
Cash flow checkout.
I'd like to return this duck.
There's that duck. Grizel Greybeard says, my small Christian middle school had to share our forest campground with an engine school. I think my Quebecois family has some splitting to do. I was the only student that was faster, stronger, and hide than them? I don't know what that part means. They canoed better, though. Well, there you go, Grizel Greybeard of Quebec, part of the Quebecois. All right, guys. Hope you enjoyed this evening. I know apparently there was... Apparently we pissed someone off. Apparently we pissed someone off. You know, someone that looks like this. Someone whose ancestors look like this got really angry. Probably not. Again, computers. So someone who wished their ancestors looked like this got very angry. But be that as it may, appreciate you guys coming by and sitting around the campfire with me at this frontier that we're exploring while dodging arrows. In the meantime, for Blackpilled, I am, of course, Devin Stack.
I don't know. Tomahawks? I don't know. Is that right? What's that? Okay. Soka Toa! Soka Toa! Soka!